Don't mess with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does death with the parents.
For me, he was the bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know why? She wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868 104 106 as the Mail put it this morning. Yes, the rain's a pain. No, there's no sign of it stopping just yet. Several more days of wet weather they're expecting, depending on where you are in the country. I mean, a whole clatterload of countries have yellow warnings, including Cork. But this trend that we have, I mean, it's quite interesting. Wetter than average conditions, certainly here in the south, from the back end of January, starts of the new year. They're talking some places at like 3 to 4 times the average rainfall amounts that you normally expect during the first 2 weeks of February, say when you compare it to this time last year or other years. So it is a significant fall. And it seems to be the big talking point everywhere you go these days, seems to be the weather, particularly with regards to the rain, with what's coming from the sky. I'll tell you another thing that's coming from the sky from today, and they are beginning to trial it. Drone deliveries from the firm Manna. It's a pilot program at the moment, right? And some local businesses are on board. They're working with the Marina Market in places like La Cantina and Frankie's and Burritos and Blues and places. And then, of course, they'll roll it out to more, but it's kind of limited at the moment from the point of view of trialing. It's a story making this morning's Examiner, making the Echo. Cork Bio this morning call it the first drone deliveries from Cork City within days. It's actually today that it actually begins, the initial test flights. But it's in limited areas. It was mad keen to get a drone delivery here to the studio before midday. We're coming up with alternative plans on that one, but we're outside of their range because we're out here in Corraheen. But, this is the future. I will come back to it a little later on. I'll talk to the people from Manna themselves. But it's dominating much of the local news this morning. They've got quieter propellers, apparently, and you won't hear them. There was a lot of criticism in Dublin with regards to the noise of them. Apparently, they've done an awful lot of work to make them quieter. So more of that a little later on. But you look at changing technology. There's a fast one there for you in The Sun this morning saying that artificial intelligence is already slashing jobs in Ireland. And unfortunately, it's the younger generations that are being impacted the worst or the most, if you like, with regards to artificial intelligence. I was telling you yesterday about some solicitors now using ChatGPT and AI to write up very, very important documentation for courts. And the judges are annoyed about this. They call them charlatans for using these. But anybody in information or communication technology or anybody working in the financial services are being warned that jobs will be lost to robots. And then the story that keeps on giving, I bet you know what I'm talking about. Yes, indeed, it's Seamus Culleton, because the Mail, the Daily and the Sunday, Mail on Sunday, continue to drip feed different stories regarding Seamus Culleton. And apparently they're telling us that he was married before. Now, some might say this is very much an invasion of the man's privacy, but they're talking about Boston police who say they responded to 2 domestic incidents involving the ICE detainee and his ex-wife over the course of their 4-year marriage. It ended in divorce. They went their separate ways. Apparently married, we knew nothing about this aspect of his life, but he married in 2007 and they divorced they separated sometime afterwards and divorced in 2024. But the Mail this morning talks about the police being called to the home. Boston Police Department said they can say no more about it apart from the fact that both incidents were domestic related. And then 2 issues on Lee's side. Flory O'Sullivan's death was an horrific thing and a dreadful tragedy for his entire family. He was 69 years old. The Echo described him this morning as a kind and good-natured man. Got into a conversation with a fella in a pub, and 4 hours later, he's bleeding heavily on the ground after being kicked in the head. This was before the court yesterday, where his brother swore. He says, "I swore on his soul that I would get justice for him." And he did yesterday. And before the court was a man called Aaron Wolfe. Now, originally the DPP wanted murder, but he pleaded guilty to manslaughter of Flory back in 2023. Up at the Glentrasna Court area of the Glen. There's an extensive court report on that, which I may well come back to it later on this morning. But apparently Wolfe was drinking pints on his own in the Linen Weaver on Paul Street from about 3 o'clock on the day in question. And Flory went in to have a cup of coffee, around about 4 o'clock, and they struck up a conversation. About 5 o'clock then, they left together. They got a taxi to the Glen. They got another taxi to Mahon, and then back to the Glen. And the taxi driver said there was nothing untoward at all with regards to, you know, any back and forth between them in the taxi. But apparently Wolfe was drinking Jägermeister during the taxi journeys and he had about 6 pints of lager in the pub. And then it resulted, some members of the public called in, a violent assault taking place outside a house. And one member of the public said that there was a man on the ground covered in blood and there was a fella kicking him on the ground and his name is Aaron. So there was a massive guard investigation there. So that makes the papers this morning front and inside pages. And then we have another very, very serious attack on a partner that makes the court reports of The Echo, where Liam Healan talks about a fella called Jonathan Kingsbury, formerly O'Connolly Road, now down in Skull. He got sentenced to 3 years and 9 months, with the last 9 months suspended, for a violent attack on his partner at the time, 3 years ago. She was left with a fractured jaw, fractured eye socket, broken nose. It's interesting that different cases before the courts involving violence against partners and sometimes really awful attacks on partners can result in all sorts of different sentencing. There doesn't seem to be any kind of, well, I shouldn't say that they're inconsistent, because I suppose a lot has been taken into consideration. But he hit her head off the countertop. He hit her head off the wall. He punched her into the face, put his hands around her neck. He threw heavy kitchen items at her. She ran from the house and called into a neighbour's, who called the guards. And I mean, the suffering afterwards for this woman, you know, it's just absolutely appalling. She's got bad anxiety. She doesn't sleep properly. She said, "Don't go outside. I don't go anywhere. I get anxiety attacks." She says, "It's horrible." She says, "All I ever want to do is cry. I want to be sick. I continue to shake." Every time she thinks of this, she tries to sleep at night. She described herself as a bubbly person. "I don't go out anymore. I don't socialise. I only call to my sister. I wouldn't feel safe anywhere, and certainly not in a pub, if I knew that he'd been sitting in there." But that was in the courts yesterday, where your man will be cooling his heels in jail for a period of time anyway. And then, if you didn't know it, I think we're going to reach a point at some stage when people will be just, it's not about being outbid anymore. They just won't be able to afford houses. They just will be, like, it'll be just outside of their budget, and they'll never be able to get a mortgage when you look at some of the prices. Now, if you're looking at maybe, you know, a 3-bedroom semi in suburban areas and satellite villages around Cork now, coming in at 485 and 500 and 525, it's absolutely mental. There's areas in Dublin now where the average house price is 1.1 million. I mean, in all fairness, what the hell is going on here? So we're looking at 25% higher house prices now than at the peak of the Celtic Tiger. And it was mad back then. It was just absolute lunacy back then. And it's 25% higher now. And I get that prices of everything have increased. And I don't know how much of it is necessary or gouging or greed. But if you look at it now, 25% higher than the Celtic Tiger, that was in 2007. Like, went from 2007 on for a little period of time. When the Tiger boom hit, right, you had the average price at 350,000. Then when it collapsed, say you look at a figure in 2012, the average price went down to 205,000. So how do we get from 205,000 to 500,000 plus? I have no idea, but people just won't be able to get the mortgages. That's going to be the thing. And if you're looking at our reliance then to keep the country afloat, about 2 weeks ago we were dealing with this topic on the air, where we're saying that the top 10 companies in Ireland pay like 90% of corporation tax, right? But if you drill into it a little bit more, like the Irish Times are this morning, they're saying that it's actually three big US firms nearly pay half of the corporation tax between the three of them in this country. And it's worth a huge amount of money. It's around 13 billion of the 28 billion that the state collects comes from Apple, Microsoft and Eli Lilly. Now, what would happen if you were to upset any of them, or they just got a figari and decided, "Nah, we're off to China. Ah, sure, we'll go to Vietnam or Cambodia or Asia or whatever the case may be." So that's the deal on that one. Three companies, Apple, Microsoft and Eli Lilly, responsible for over half the corporation tax collected in the state year in, year out. And it's tough doing business. And I really do feel for Cumann Sports. And I really, again, reiterate over and over again the importance of trying to support local. It doesn't even involve having to go into the physical shop anymore, particularly if companies have very good online presence. But it was sad to see that Cumann Sports in Ballincollig closed. And then we hear this morning that the North Main Street has shut up shop, as you know, and it's on the market for 1.2 million. There are many other branches, though, of Cumann Sports. And this is a company, Annalisa, that's been around for decades and decades. I remember the one years ago when the kids were small, the Cummins Sports in Douglas Court. The staff were absolutely incredible. There were times when they would say, look, why don't you just take it home, see if it fits, and if it does, come back and pay. They just had wonderful customer service. And this morning they're reminding people of the good news that you can still visit Cummins Sports Blackpool, Middleton, Fermoy and Douglas and continue shopping. And also they talk about their online presence, which is really important, cummins.ie. But quickly they say, it's nice to show a face every now and then, even though you can shop online. And it's important to remember those things. Like, it's very sad also to see that the Regal Cinema just couldn't make it work. And, you know, that's the one down in East Cork in the town of Youghal. I don't know why. I mean, clearly, and I'm not saying this in any kind of critical way, it must have it to do with maybe it wasn't being supported, the Regal Cinema. It was just palatial down there. It was so pristine and beautiful, and they did a wonderful refurb to the cinema that went back to the 1930s, for God's sake. But now they're closing, and they've had to slash the price for anybody that might be interested in purchasing this Art Deco cinema. It was 300,000 on the market 2 years ago, and now they've slashed the asking. Well, it was actually originally 600,000 in 2024, and now they've reduced it even further to 295,000. And one of the reasons why is they don't have actual trading figures available. People buy things based on your last year's trading figures. And of course, they haven't got any of those because it closed on Christmas Eve 2 years ago. So that's very sad. It's just sad when you think at a time, really, when cinemas are actually doing quite well. It's a whole new generation now that love to go to the cinemas. We talk a lot about sulkies, e-scooters, and those morons on the scramblers on the South Ring a couple of days ago, which I was talking about on air yesterday morning. If you want to know who's using the bicycle lanes, certainly down in the Mahon Black Rock area, take a look at the Cork Independent this morning, where they're saying it's sulkies that are using the cycle lanes. And by all accounts, these sulkies, which, for those of you that don't know, they are lightweight horse-drawn carts. And unfortunately, sometimes you can observe some of those in the sulkies being very cruel and abusive to the poor horses. But apparently, Mahon and Blackrock locals are really, really bothered by the amount of sulkies that are using the cycle lanes down there. And also the pedestrian routes. They don't give a damn. They just do whatever they want, wherever they want. And you got youngsters as young as 10, apparently, up in the sulkies. And there's going to be an accident there. Somebody's going to be hurt or possibly even killed. The Independent this morning says that sulkies have shot out in front of traffic, right in front of drivers. They also think that the fault lies with the parents, the people of Mahon down there, the parents of the children, and not the children themselves. Like, for instance, if your child, if somebody takes their parents' car keys, it's not the child is responsible, it's the parents of the child, right? So what are they going to do about it? Who knows? But sulkies and e-scooters and scramblers continue to rule the day. And then the papers this morning talk about all sorts of stuff relating to social media. Won't even go there because the Social Democrats are saying no matter what kind of an under 16 social media ban you come up with, it will be unworkable, it's pointless, because young people will always find a way around it. What happens next? Micheál Martin has to move on. He's got to do something about it. So anybody following that story of the two climbers who climbed the summit of Austria's highest peak, they ended up in temperatures of minus 20. They got into trouble not too far from the summit. And one of them, as in the boyfriend, is now charged with manslaughter amid claims that he abandoned his girlfriend to die at the top of the mountain. There's an inside page story making the Mail today. Climber accused of manslaughter after he left his girlfriend to freeze to death on Austria's highest mountain. He's 33 years old. So is she. And actually, he's 39 and she was 33. Kirsten Guttner perished just below the summit. Her partner goes on trial today, accused of negligent homicide because he left her exhausted, hypothermic and disorientated. It's a lengthy story. Now, he will claim that he went looking for help, but not everybody agrees with that. I mean, at one stage, his phone was on silent. So you have to see what happens with regards to that court report. And another one from overseas. Morocco would be part of the 2030 Soccer World Cup. And apparently they got a major problem in Morocco with stray dogs. So since the announcement was made, according to the Mail this morning, they've been accused now of culling 3 million stray dogs ahead of the co-hosting of the World Cup in 2030. So apparently they've been capturing and killing dogs since it was confirmed that they and Spain and Portugal would host the World Cup. Allegedly, dogs have been clamped by the neck, loaded into trucks and poisoned or shot. And then these dogs, up to 3 million strays. They've got a big problem with stray dogs there, but it's got to be a better way, don't you think? They're then buried and disposed of in mass graves. And they've got to get rid of them, apparently, before the World Cup infrastructure starts to be built. And I suppose Bono would be livid about that. And Bono was livid about all sorts of things. He's making the papers this morning because he's having a go at Donald Trump. And of course, ICE. And the way they behave with regards to rounding people up in an appalling manner. And they've also released some new material, and the songs involved in that new material are very much about the state of the world and how things have gone from bad to worse, certainly through the eyes of Bono. There's other music-related stories making the papers also. Like, if you've got deep pockets, right? If you've got deep pockets and you're a fan of the Beatles, you might like to buy Ringo Starr's drum kit from back in the day. It goes on auction at 1.8 million. It will go higher than that. I saw a Black Strat recently sell for 3 million. So I think that the drum kit from Ringo Starr from the heyday of the Beatles will go for a lot more than 1.8. But it's there, actually, should you have a few bob salted away and you're a Beatles fan. Like Paul McCartney's handwritten lyrics of Hey Jude have a price of 830,000 for the handwritten lyrics. So that's going to be a million plus all day long. Kurt Cobain's guitar from Nirvana, 91, 4.2 million. See what I mean? Black Strat last I don't know, a couple of months ago for over 3. Kurt Cobain's will go for at least 4 million. So what is it with poor old Ringo Starr's drum kit? You think it would do a little more than 1.8? Be interesting. I love those kind of things because they always come in way over. The hammer price is always an awful lot higher. And if you're a Presley fan, an Elvis Presley fan, they've only just gone and found a whole load of lost reels, apparently, that were buried underground in a Kansas City salt mine. Don't ask me why somebody buried them down there, but it's incredible footage that will feature in a brand new epic documentary film on Elvis Presley. I was chatting with a pal of mine last night. He was totally kept under control by Colonel Parker. I mean, he never, ever, ever toured or travelled outside of America, which was an awful shame back in the day for people all over the world. But apparently this film goes on general release on the 27th. I think it actually goes on release on from IMAXs from tomorrow and then general release. Loads of new material, by all accounts, from these different old reels that have been discovered. So for Elvis fans, something nice to look forward to.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
You're part of the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. Now, yesterday I spoke to Jackie Toomey, whose husband Noel got 9 years and one suspended for a vicious attack on his wife in their home in Knocknaheeny in 2024. Jackie was asleep in the bed at the time and he poured boiling water over her head and he attacked her with a claw hammer. I want to thank Jackie for coming on air yesterday. Another story making the papers this morning. Another sentence for similar attack on an ex-partner. Interestingly, delighted, says Eddie, that man got 8 years. He deserves it. But more men also need to speak out who do not come forward because they feel nothing will be done if they do come forward. Many men can easily be homeless by default from false allegations or partners that actually do have mental illness but refuse to get help, which is related to why many fathers now end up as sole carers. And why was Noel not forced into doing some kind of work if he managed to just live his life on benefits and got so used to it? Now he's costing the taxpayer even more at 100 grand a year. I have no idea. I'm only going by what Jackie said. He never, ever worked, never had a job and would say things like, why would I want to work when I can get everything for free? My blood is boiling after hearing a reporter ask Jackie why she didn't leave. I'm a survivor of domestic abuse, no longer a victim, a survivor. I met my ex-husband when I was 17, finally got the courage to leave when I was 49. The years in between were a living hell, and he used every form of abuse to control me. Yes, I survived after trips to the A&E with broken ribs and a brain bleed and black eyes. I finally took him to court after an assault that happened after I had left him. The Garda I made the complaint to, who was female, sat with him in court as she knew him from his workplace. There was a safety order in place at the time. I'm still in counselling 13 years later, but I don't blame myself anymore. I've accepted that I did what I had to do to survive. I've no problem speaking to you off air, but obviously my identity is important to me. Thanks for covering this subject, Neil, because I'm in the process of setting up a group myself for abused people in my area. What abused people must remember is that it was never your fault, no matter what the abuser tells you. You do matter. People do love you. Don't be afraid to speak up. I know it's fair to say now that I wish I had spoken up sooner. I got out many years ago, Neil. I had to leave it all behind. I got my sanity back, got my life back together. It's tough, but not impossible. Thank you for that, and I wish you the best of luck going forward with your new life. I saw yesterday Emma Hallahan post. It's absolutely horrendous, and it's actually very traumatic to read, the case of Jackie Toomey. Things seriously need to change in this country. And, of course, she can talk from experience as a domestic abuse survivor herself. Emma, good morning. Can you hear me all right? Okay, well, that ain't happening for me, so I can come back to it in a few minutes' time. It's interesting to talk to Emma, actually, because we're also looking at yet another case before the courts this morning of another sentence being handed down for a violent attack by an ex-partner. And I know in the case of Emma, because I remember talking to her on the air at the time regarding her ex-boyfriend, Anthony McAsee, who dragged her up and down the stairs by the hair, beat her, held her at knife point, told her he was going to kill her, and things like that. Like, he got 1 year behind bars for his shocking crime. So what I'm saying, I'm not saying that there's inconsistencies or that the sentencing is wrong. I don't know enough about all the different cases to say that. But you do see a lot of different sentences handed down for what I suppose is maybe just a civilian in the state. You would think they're all under the same umbrella of violent domestic partner abuse, right? So I don't know. Let me try again. Emma, can you hear me now? No, not happening. Okay, we'll take a break, come back after the break. Well, actually, I'll tell you what, we'll just go to other calls and come back to her when she's sorted. Jim, good morning. Jim.
Hello, yeah, sorry. How are you, boy?
I'm good. Okay, that's a pretty shocking phone line. Okay, so
Okay, is that better?
Okay, well, let's see. We'll work with what we have and see how we get on. It's interesting because there was one text there just that I started out with regards to men not speaking up and needing to speak out more.
Yeah, I suppose there's a lot of guys trapped in bad marriages and relationships as well, Neil, you know. And you never hear guys complain, no, I'm not. Anyone that hits a woman like is off the table as far as I'm concerned, you know. But I just know people stay together for all the wrong reasons and they shouldn't, you know. And you could be years and years in the wrong relationship and it's just not healthy for both parties. But trying to leave is impossible for both parties as well, you know.
Right, okay.
And some of the women can be abusive as well, and those guys just sit out. You know, every time you hear anybody coming on, it's always attack the guy, and, you know, guys are quiet. So guys are simple, in fairness, you know, most of us. But I just think guys don't get a fair swing at this either, you know.
I have on a few occasions seen court cases where females have been brought to court for violent and abusive behaviour. But it there's not a lot of them. The vast majority is the other way around.
Yeah, well, I suppose they now have shown it even from the LGB community, the amount of violence between both women and men, or even two girls together, is getting very prominent as well, you know. So, I mean, there's to be two women in a relationship. So this is just what happens when people live together. And they can't get on with each other, and it's very hard to leave now with the home, the properties.
But that's more of a toxic relationship where there's two in it, and they just don't get on, and it's violent and verbal and abusive on both sides. It's a very different situation if you're stuck in coercive control with a narcissist, a violent man.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're stuck in a terrible relationship with a woman for 20 years, and you're just living day to day, and mentally, that's a very destroying thing for a guy, you know. And there's no way out. That's just as bad, you know. It's not healthy and it's not good.
Yeah. Well, certainly we're seeing more court reports, which means that more and more people are getting out and they are taking criminal proceedings against a violent partner. There are organisations then that can help. Women's Aid is one of them. Men's Aid is another one. But you're speaking about yet another group that has just started up. Is it for men?
Yeah, I just came across it there, but it's getting global interest now, and it's very big in America and in Canada, and it's called MGTOW, and it's a short for Men Going Their Own Way, and it's about, I suppose it's not been anti-woman or anti-female, but it definitely is anti-feminist, like, you know, with some women can be nasty in bars and clubs and stuff, but it's about being a member of this group, and, you know, there's hints in there, there's things to tell you how to protect yourself, and it's actually growing, so it's called MGTOW. I was impressed that, you know, there's nobody making money off this. It's just a webpage you can go in and you can leave a comment and you can read how other guys are getting on.
What do you mean? It's not. I mean, there's no kind of nastiness in there, is there?
No. It's just about men going on their own way and telling guys that, hey, it's good to be alone and you can do it on your own. You know, stand up for yourself and don't.
So it's not anything that's kind of anti-women or kind of bigging up men. It has more to do with men who have had issues in relationships and either left or are thinking of leaving the relationship because of it, is it?
That's it. That's what it is. That's what it's about. And like, there's a lot of things out there for women. Look, you can go to college now and study women's studies. You know, now it's a year course. Like, let's face it, it takes me 40 years to figure out what a woman is doing, but they can do it in college in a year. But anyway, that's another day. Sorry,
it's
out of the
It's lighthearted. Yeah, don't worry about it. Women would say the same. Women would say they could spend a lifetime trying to work out a man and they'd never achieve it.
Yeah. But, I just thought it was interesting, MG4. Something, you know, and I'm sure there'll be guys listening there that we'll get something out of it, you know. And it's not negative. It is very anti-feminist, all right, in the sense of the kind of nasty women that really are trying to tell you just to move away from it. Or if you're in a relationship that, because you can be married and the woman can go out and tell everybody we're in love, you go back behind the door, they don't even talk, you know.
But that's a two-way street. It can be either or, but we don't hear as much about men as victims of or survivors of domestic abuse, that's for sure. All right, good point. Thanks for that. Actually, it's a point actually put to Vicky Buckley, a solicitor who deals with domestic abuse and coercive control cases a lot of the time before the courts. Vicky, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
Just good, thank you. Just on that point there that Jim made, because it comes across your office desk, your law firm desk a lot, would there be many situations where men have found themselves victims or survivors?
Yes, there would. Yeah, and it's definitely something that we have to recognise. And I think it's kind of, I suppose, obvious from the point of view that it's very little physical violence. It does happen, but it's more of the coercive, emotional put downs, that kind of emotional abuse, and it's quite prevalent. It really is.
But when you say prevalent, if you were to break it into a pie chart of 100%, 100% being all of the issues regarding men, women, women, men, what percentage would be men having issues? 10, 15, 20?
I'd say, look, from what we're seeing coming through, and I think society is changing and recognising it, we're probably seeing about 80-20.
80-20.
Maybe. Yeah.
And does the 20% involving men involve violent assault?
It can do. It can. Yeah, it can. It can, involve physical violence. Which is, you know, something to kind of take a breath and recognise. It can involve physical violence, sexual violence, but primarily it would be the psychological and emotional abuse that's going on.
Yeah,
and it's vicious. It's vicious. It really is. Yeah.
And can you take legal action for psychological abuse?
You can, and this is what I was listening to yesterday that I think is really important, that psychological abuse is now recognised under both criminal and family law legislation. So it sounds awful to say you don't need a bruise to be abused. Do you know what I mean? But that's a phrase that I've started to hear. The psychological abuse is recognised in family court, and it's recognised under coercive control, which is now a criminal offence. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the psychological abuse, it just goes so deep, because I suppose it goes.
Okay, something, an issue here with our phone lines, which I'll try and rectify because I'm keen to hear what Vicky has to say, and I'm quite sure you are too. We'll take an ad break, see if we can sort it.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now, 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Apologies for this, but we'll drive on. Vicky, I was making the point there. You were talking about the amounts that are before our courts now, and that it can also involve criminal action when it's not even violent and it's psychological abuse and it goes on for years.
Yes.
But are there statistics to say that it's getting worse or that it's being reported more now and it's being taken more seriously? Which?
I would assume there's always somebody doing statistics on it, but I suppose from a practical living in the courts kind of point of view, I think that the courts are far more cognizant of it, in that the judges are more, like, there's a lot of training going on with judges. There's a lot of international review of of different approaches in different jurisdictions. And I think people are recognising practitioners, judges and the guards. The guards are really, really well trained, and there's a special unit developed and everything for it. That, you know, it's more than just physical violence. It's the emotional, it's the psychological control that, you know, somebody uses against somebody. And it can go on for years. And I actually think that lady that was on yesterday, Jackie, so much of what she said is happening in so many different situations, be it that the lady is a victim or be it that the man is the victim. But it's a kind of a hidden abuse, if that makes sense, because there's no physical version of it. But it's the control, it's the isolation, it's financial, it's sexual. There's so many subtleties to it. It's vicious. Really,
why then would if take just on any given day three different court reports of three different guilty verdicts on stories like this? One, of course, would have been the case of, as you say, Jackie, at the hands of her husband, Noel Toomey. He got 9 years with one suspended. I was talking recently to Emma Hallahan, who was put through a horrific sustained assault at the hands of her ex-boyfriend, who got, I think it was 1 year behind bars. And the court reports recently, a woman who was violently attacked, left with a fractured jaw, fractured eye socket, broken nose, regards to her ex-partner. He got 3 years. What's going on there with all of the different... Is that inconsistent, or is it that I just don't have all of the facts?
If you're to take a snapshot like that, you're saying, sure, we're not doing anything about it. Do you know what I mean? What's 1 year going to do with regards to, you know, somebody suffering a violent assault like that? It's quite a particular type of situation, right? And I think Jackie alluded to a bit of it yesterday, that when she was sitting in court and she was listening to what we call the mitigation. So everyone is entitled to a plea of mitigation, in that what you start with a kind of a balanced scale going into the courthouse, in that you've pleaded guilty to an offence, and then there's aggravating factors which will increase your sentence, and there's other factors, you know, that will mitigate it. And I don't want to sound trivial about it.
No, you're not. But I mean, like you say, pleading guilty. All right, but that could be just a solicitor saying, "Listen, you're dead to rights here. You're not going to beat this. They have you. Plead guilty. Yeah. It'll reduce your sentence." You know,
that's automatically something that's taken in your favour. So if you plead guilty in a criminal case, the court has to consider that as a positive.
So what is that? Is that 10% off, 20% off? What?
That's only kind of the starting point, right? So they say, look, the thinking behind it is that they've actually saved the court time. Most importantly, they've saved the injured party having to go through the ordeal and give evidence. So that's the main credit for that. So you do get a percentage discount for that. Then you'll get the courts will look at other matters, like, you know, if you've gone and attended with, say, a psychologist for anger management courses.
But genuinely now, I'm sure that there are some people who do go because they need to go, but others are just trying it on to get the sentence down, right?
I suppose society is what it is. Do you know what I mean? There's tricks and moves and loops and holes that people will move through. And there's people in court that are more familiar with the courthouse than I am, and I'm going out there for 20 years, you know?
Okay.
There is ways.
So you've got the psychological report, you have the guilty plea, you have the letter of apology, possible references from employers, and all that just minuses the sentence, does it?
It does, it does. So do you know the way on the top of most courthouses, traditionally there'd have been Lady Justice with her scales? So that's the way every case starts when it goes in. And if somebody doesn't do, you know, what is expected of them as a reasonable, I say reasonable inverted commas, right, because of the context of why they're before the court, in any event, you know, where's the reasonableness in that behaviour, you would say. But I suppose what we have to do is we have to look at due process, yeah? And everyone has to be given that process in court. And I kind of say that ambiguity, you know, a certain element of ambiguity about because of the nature of the offences that we're actually talking about, yeah? But a society in a common law jurisdiction, everyone has the right to a fair hearing, and everyone has the right to fair process when they actually go in with a guilty plea. So the court will consider whether or not they have previous convictions for similar offences.
Why should that matter in the case of a violent, vicious attack where you're threatening people?
Because it's an aggravating factor, because if somebody comes before the court and they have, you know, say Section 2, Section 3 minor assaults previously, this is showing a pattern of their behaviour, and the court's looking at it from the point of view that they're just they were given an opportunity before and they haven't done anything about it. So that's an aggravating factor if you have previous offences, in any criminal offence, basically.
Okay. But then again, there's still a big disparity between 9 years in one case, 3 years in another case, and 1 year in a third. Like, it's just...
Yeah,
confusing.
So and I suppose without going to technicalities of it, there has to be proportionality of sentencing. Though that sounds very lawyery.
No, but okay.
The judges are very much aware of that.
How do they come up with the number, though? Because is it different? Judges have different ways. Some judges are tougher than others. What?
Yeah, absolutely. I think once they adhere to the guidelines, I sound like a textbook, but once they adhere to the guidelines, then it's very much down to, I suppose, the barrister or the solicitor who's actually making the case on behalf of somebody. And it depends then on the judge and what they're considering with regards to all of the evidence. But I suppose the judges are ready. Like, you can appeal any decision that's made if we think that the judge has erred in law. So if the judge makes a mistake in law, then you can appeal that sentence.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So there are restrictions on the judges as to whether or not they can say, well, I don't really, you know, I'm not in the mood today, I don't care. It's not like that anymore.
Okay,
it's not,
okay.
It's all right. Not, no.
Appreciate it. No. I just want to get back to Emma Hallan. Appreciate you taking the call. Vicky Buckley, who's got her own law firm, and she's online as well, mylegal.ie. Emma, good morning.
Good morning,
yes. You are aware your man is out now, isn't he?
So he was released on the 5th of January after serving a total of 9 months. So he was originally sentenced to 4 years in the court, but 1 year was taken off for him pleading guilty, and then another 2 years were suspended. And there was a lot of factors put into that. You know, he would have to be on probation for those 2 years.
Okay, so it's important to correct that. So he was jailed for just 1 year behind bars for a shocking crime, but he got a lengthier sentence. Some was because he was already in custody for a period of it, and then there was what, good behaviour and things.
Yeah, so automatically, I think it's a third that they're allowed off their total sentence for good behaviour. So that would have left him with a 9 month sentence.
My God almighty.
Which he served. Yeah. And I suppose, like, one of the things that was frustrating for me, which came about after his sentencing, and it was a mitigating factor, like Vicky was speaking about, was a character reference that was provided to him by University Hospital Limerick, as he had been employed
there.
Yeah,
I remember that, because they kind of said, we don't know where that came from. We it wasn't us, or it wasn't didn't
Absolutely.
It didn't go any through any official channels. That
no, and you see, like, that's the frustrating part, because obviously it was after the court that this was realised, that it hadn't come from management or
somebody just took it upon themselves. Yeah.
And I mean, that is being investigated by the Gardaí.
Okay, so he's out now, considering what he did to you and served such a short sentence, Anthony Mackesy.
Yes.
He got out in January, I think, did he?
Yes, the 5th of January.
Okay, and how do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm still quite nervous. Where I'm living at the moment, he still knows where I live. You know, I am trying to secure another home, which is impossible. But when I go out my door, you know, I'm still on high alert. You know, even if I see the same car that he has passing, like, even though I know he doesn't live in the same county and that he is prohibited from any direct or indirect contact with me for 5 years, you know, that still doesn't take away that fear from me, you know, that these things are in place.
Like, if he were to come anywhere near you physically, pick up the phone and call you, send you a text message, contact you on social media, he goes back to jail, is it?
That's correct. Yeah.
So he wants to be off his head to come anywhere near you now.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, and that's all easy to say, I suppose. But when you're actually the person that's in this situation, it's very hard. Now, I am receiving counselling, but it's very, very hard to understand, you know, fear that still is instilled in you.
Oh, no, I listen. They're only words from me, and I only say them to try and make you feel a bit better.
Absolutely.
But I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, you still have to live with the consequences of what he did to you.
And I mean, suppose my rational thoughts, you know, like my rational thoughts tell me, you know, yeah, he would be crazy to do this. And realistically, he's probably not going to.
Yeah.
But then my irrational thoughts tell me different, you know. So, and I suppose that's all part of the trauma.
Yeah, yeah. The court heard quite a lot of detail as to what he did to you, and so did we on the air the last time we spoke. I mean, he was infatuated with crime and murder scenes. He would force you to go to various murder scenes with him, including the Sophie Toscan de Plantier site in Skull, and I think also the Satchwell home in Yall. The injuries that he inflicted upon you, the beatings, the, you know, dragging you up and down the stairs, holding you at night point with a very... Forgive me for reminding people of this, Emma. You don't need reminding.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, at knife point saying, you know, this is the night that you're going to die. For all of that, it seemed like a very light sentence.
Yes, and I suppose, just to clarify that there was three charges against him. So there was the Section 3 assault, there was the criminal damage, and there was the charge for producing a knife. Now, because he pleaded guilty, I suppose his barrister and the state barrister, they come to a deal where if Anthony pleaded guilty, that they would drop the charge of the criminal damage and producing the knife, but it would still be taken into account. So it would still be heard, the evidence would still be heard, but he was only being charged on the Section 3 assault.
How do you feel about that, these kind of behind-the-scene deals?
I think it's extremely unfair. At the time when this deal was being made, I was still with Anthony. I was still in a relationship with Anthony.
Yeah.
I was terrified to leave. Absolutely terrified, and I had to go along with him down to the part where I had to pretend that I was okay with this.
That's right.
To the DPP.
Yeah, so, you only dropped the bombshell on when the court case started. That was a great move.
You know, and that was down to having a lot of support from Oasis House Women's Refuge in Waterford, the detective dealing with the case. Priscilla and Amy Granger from Stop Domestic Violence Ireland, the support that I had from them in the background, and also Erica, the lady from the men's programme. Like, the support I got from them was life-saving.
Okay. And what do you think of the... What do you make of the sentence yesterday with regards to 9 years with one suspended? It's a fairly hefty sentence for Toomey, isn't it?
Yeah, like... I think the 9 years, you know, but really, does it fit the crime? I don't believe it fits the crime.
Well, it's just a lot more so than the 3 years or your ex walking free after 1 year behind bars, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. But if you look at the injuries that that lady was put through, you know, it's absolutely, I mean... It's life-changing, you know, the injuries that she suffered.
Well, it's life-changing for you as well, though. You must imagine you're still very nervous or anxious as you go about. You know, it's changed your life with regards to the outward, bubbly, socialising type person that you were.
Yeah, I mean, like, because for 2 years of that relationship, I was completely cut off all social media. There actually was a loss of control in the relationship.
Yeah.
And these are the things, like you were talking to Vicky about, you know, this whole coercive control. These parts aren't supported and these parts aren't taken into account when these men are being sentenced. It's literally on the action that night.
That's a very interesting point. So the future impact is never taken into consideration. That's very important. It should be for sentencing, shouldn't it?
Really, really it should. And I suppose, like... As the victim, you get 5 minutes or whatever it is to give your victim impact statement. And you need to make that as strong as possible to let the judge know exactly how this affected you on the night, how this is going to affect you in the future. You know, and it's extremely difficult to do when you're sitting there with your perpetrator sitting in front of you in the courtroom, and you were terrified.
I know.
So, and like, as I think we mentioned it before, like there's not a whole lot of support for the actual victim in the courtroom. You know, whereas the perpetrator has their barrister, they have their solicitor, but you're really, you feel like you're just a witness to the whole thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's as if the whole system revolves around the defendant, if you like. Listen, thanks so much again for coming on the air this morning. I wish you well, Emma. Do stay in touch. Always appreciate your input.
Thank you so much.
Take care for now.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Neil. Thank you.
You're the best. Take care. Take care. Text 0868104106. Let me just correct, actually, inadvertently got Vicky Buxley, the solicitor's website, incorrectly. It's mvlegal.ie, should you wish to maybe get in touch. You might be going through something you might need legal intervention. Vicky Buckley's website, further details, mvlegal.ie.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868104106. People don't understand. People in abusive situations can't leave, Neil. The abuser takes everything away from them. It's physical, emotional, domestic and sexual abuse that they put victims through. The person is broken as the abuser takes their identity and the person that they actually were. So it's not easy to leave. Now, that is a fabulous, fabulous response to the question that people ask sometimes as to why did you stay? Why didn't you leave? And thank you for that text. MGTOW, MGTOW, that Jim referenced, is a misogynistic, anti-female, male separatist group with ideals similar to Andrew Tate. You need to tell people that. It encourages men to be on their own if their wife or partner doesn't act in the way they want them to. It is not something innocent, as your caller suggests, in any way, shape or form. I think this was evident when he likened living with an abuser to living with a woman you just don't get on with. Okay, so that's important to clarify, because Emer did a little look then at MGTOW, which is described on Wiki as anti-feminist, misogynistic, an online community that espouses male separatism. It specifically advocates for men to avoid marriage and committed romantic relationships with women. Avoid them. It's a part of the manosphere, not unlike incels and the men's rights movements that have gone too far, I suppose. Interestingly, and it's important to say that it may not be as innocent as perhaps had been mentioned heretofore. Breaking news this morning, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has been arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office, according to Thames Valley Police. That is a massive breaking story this morning. We actually have a former royal in the shape of Andrew being arrested by Thames Valley Police. That's a breaking story at the moment. Pat Buckley mentioned recently, actually, because I was asking the question to Vicky Buckley, the solicitor, as to whether we are finding that there are more and more cases involving, if you were to use the umbrella term of domestic abuse, covering all of the gamut, the entire remit of domestic abuse, physical, psychological, manipulative, controlling, gaslighting, all of these things. He says that the Cork County region has seen a 50% increase since 2020 with regards to An Garda Síochána engaging with people who are calling for help with regards to abusive domestic relationships. A 50% increase. They're putting the figure at 1,882 last year alone, 50,000 nationally in 2024. And, you know, God only knows what 2026 will be like, if 2024 and 2025 are like that. It's broken down then into Cork City and County. If you go back to 2020 in the city, 2,300, and then you move up to, say, 2024, which is kind of the last set of figures that are available, goes from 1,500 to 2,500. So that kind of answers my question with regards to absolute increases in that regard. Text 0868104106. It should be mandatory, says John. 10-year sentence for this type of abuse. End of story. The sentencing examples you've just given are a joke. Somebody's suggesting then, when getting a divorce, can you say what happened in the marriage? Or is it just about the finances? Well, that's a very, very broad question, I would think. I've no legal mind at all. Well, except for maybe cop on and common sense. But divorce really is kind of like about the division of everything in your life and your partner, whom you're soon going to divorce, that person's life as well. So it can come down to all sorts of issues. But if it is a contested divorce, of course, or if there are, you know, issues involving, you know, things that happened in the marriage, or custody of children, that's a completely different area, completely. It's much more complex than that. But, you know, if it's and when you say the things that happened in the marriage, I think that would very much depend on what happened in the marriage. But in a divorce scenario, that would be a civil issue. Do you know what I mean? They won't be dealing with the civil aspect of the separation and the divorce. The other aspects of whatever went on in the marriage could potentially be criminal and wouldn't be able to be handled by a solicitor. I'm just saying that would be my understanding if you're asking me. Text 0868104106. You talk about, you know, keeping people safe of all sorts of different ages. Like originally there was a post put up online from the Ballinlock area, which was posted to talk and to warn parents about keeping their children safe. And the post said, "Dear parents and guardians, this is not to alarm you, but to remind you to tell your boys to be extra vigilant. On Thursday, the 12th of February at 5 o'clock, two pupils at St. Anthony's Boys National School were near Ardfallon, making the short walk to the playground here in Ballinlock to play with older siblings and what have you. And as they were walking, the two boys were asked by two males in a light brown 18C van if they wanted to get in." Now, that is even alarming, saying the words. "The two boys turned and ran back to one of their parents who was in close proximity at the time." Thankfully, that was a proper thing to do. "The Gardaí have been notified of this incident. We have a stay safe program here in St. Anthony's Boys National School. All classes are taught lessons on stranger danger and how to respond. We know that the boys were upset by what happened. We send out this email to all parents, not to alarm you, but to remind you to tell your boys to be extra vigilant and keep them safe." Now, they have part of the reg of this, a light brown 18C van, where these two males in the van asked the lads if they wanted to get in. I mean, you can only, I mean, you've got a brain in your head. You know what that's all about, don't you? But thankfully, it would appear that this Stay Safe program in St. Anthony's, which teaches lessons on stranger danger, worked in this case. Now, it could also be warnings from their parents saying to them, never do this, never go with strangers, never interact. But certainly, it's good to hear these type of... It's sad in one way that these type of courses or lessons are given in primary school, but you can see how important they are. Stranger danger and Stay Safe programs for children. I pass it on because, you know, whatever happened... I don't doubt for a moment that this is an actual, you know, portrayal of what actually did happen on February the 12th of a Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock. But it could happen elsewhere outside other primary schools in the sense that this van and these two men could well try again. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Yeah, that's the story on that one. We'll come back to it after the break.
Prendeville Now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Jump back into text as we head through the morning. Just an update on that text which said, when getting a divorce, can you say about what happened in the marriage or is it just about finances? I'd just seen that text come to me and I responded to it as best I could. But actually, very interestingly, if you are listening, because you sent the text, you probably are. Yes, apparently, you can bring up aspects of the relationship in a case of, say, for instance, a fault-based divorce, which is probably what you're talking about, as opposed to a no-fault divorce, where it would be just a division of assets and making arrangements with regards to children and things like that. But say, for instance, coercive control or abuse, if that's what you're referenced to in your text, then they frequently arise in divorce proceedings and it can kind of serve as evidence for like unreasonable behavior if it's a fault-based divorce, which you perhaps, the text who's listened to me, might well be talking about. And that can influence things like child arrangements and financial settlements and protection orders. And victims often cite it as maybe their primary reason in the first place for separation as they're going through it. So to answer your question, Emer just checked it there. Yes, it can figure in a breakup and a divorce about what happened within the relationship, and it's not necessarily in a fault based divorce. It's not necessarily, just about a division of assets. It can really influence settlements in a divorce. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. You might have heard yesterday in the news, Michael Collins, West Cork TD, leader of Independent Ireland, describe school lunches, or at least some of the ones that he saw, as gunk. G-U-N-K, gunk. And he joins me by phone this morning. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Why do you say gunk? Did somebody send you an actual example of the food?
Well, better than that, I got to see it. A parent rang me on a totally different issue one day, and I was travelling, and they said, if you saw, actually on another issue, they said, if you saw these school dinners that the children are getting, it's appalling. My daughter came home this evening. I said, actually, I'm not far away, and I called to the house. And to be honest with you, Neil, it was revolting to say the very least. I have a strong stomach, and when I saw it, I had to turn away. It was like as if there was worms inside in some kind of a gravy, brown, meaty type substance of some sort. I couldn't describe it.
You couldn't identify. You called to the house to examine the evidence, and you couldn't identify the evidence.
I couldn't, and I certainly would not have ate it, and I couldn't dare put it out. Like someone said, you wouldn't give it to dogs. Sure, we love our dogs. We wouldn't dare give it to a dog.
Okay. But with further investigation, did you work out what it was on a menu?
It's meant to be some kind of a beef set up. Now, it's come very clear from the department. They're not stating where they're sourcing their beef. They're saying it could be Brazilian, could be Irish, and that's a very serious matter, number one.
Right.
Number two, the problem is this whole rollout of the children's meals, which I totally agree with. It's a great idea, but it's been dealt with through the Department of Education and Department of Social Welfare. And I think anything that is being dealt with two departments ends up falling between two stools. And I think it's going out there now to the highest bidder and those who can try and get the cheapest meal out to people. There's meal providers out there that might be very angry about this, but I only see what I saw. And, several pictures have been sent to me since to my email.
Like the photographs that I saw that I think you were sent on is some kind of a burnt and dried ciabatta with some kind of filling in it that you use as a doorstop. Is that the one you're referencing?
Yeah, that's the one, which is absolutely disgusting.
But I have to disappoint you. It wasn't beef. It was chicken.
Oh, it could well be, but sure you wouldn't know. But looking into it, all it was brown with white, seemingly like noodles surrounding in it. So it just...
At some stage in its life, it was a chicken melt.
It could well be.
In a former life.
Yeah, it could have been in a former life, and where that chicken came from, I'd like to know. But how it ended up in a plate for a child or a young person to eat is beyond me.
Okay, so they couldn't eat it, so they have to bring the food home if they don't eat it. So the parents must have been horrified when they saw this thing.
They were obviously the child has never gone back. The child said, "Mom, I can't eat that. I won't eat that." And absolutely no way. The parents said, "You can't," and they wouldn't. I even rang him. That was about maybe 2 months ago. I rang him again the other day and said, "No, we gave it up completely. The school meal." So that's not what the school meal is all about, Neil. School meal is meant to give a nutritious meal to a child, and that may need it. In fairness, may not have had a breakfast in the morning and may have a serious concern about a breakfast in the evening. And there is a simple way out, and I'm more from saying it. It doesn't seem nobody wants to take it up, and that the meals and wheels are the only ones, in my view, that can carry out. They're a non-for-profit body, so they're not out there to make money on this. They'll just get their funding for their meals, and they'll provide them to schools. I know it's going to be huge undertaking for meals and wheels, but my God, will that child go home and not need anything to eat? I can guarantee you that is the case, because the meals and wheels, the link to bread of the country, have delivered beautiful meals to elderly people, nutritious
meals. Not all the time, Michael. I mean, I had a period in my life when I was trying to get my father to take Meals and Wheels in the particular area, and it was delivered for a few days, and I have to say it was very disappointing. It actually saddened me when I saw examples of the food that the elderly and senior citizens were being actually sent. It was just dreadful.
Genuinely, I can't account for everywhere, but all I do know is that there's a very strict procedure, because I'm in a community council.
Well, you might well be lucky, and maybe this is the same for the school meals. It can depend on the provider, right?
Absolutely, but with the meals and wheels, it's HSE are in charge of it. They pay for the cook. The meal is cooked and handed out to the people from door to door. And there's beautiful potatoes, beef, fish, whatever you know your dietary needs are. But the bottom line is this isn't good enough at all. And what children are getting, it's ultra processed foods, and it's just junked together and thrown out to the school at the cheapest rate that is possible.
Yeah.
And while I do agree with the school meals, it's a great idea, but badly thought out, really badly thought out.
And are you basing that on one example of what a parent told you and showed you?
No, I've been given other examples too, especially since I showed this picture up at the Flint and the Doll on Tuesday. There's loads of people come back to me, just what we had to give up, this is why we stopped our child having this. So, yes, I do respect there might be some operators out there providing something nutritious, but it can mean nothing more nutritious than having a nice potato dinner with beef or with fish or whatever that can be landed there, and that's what the Meals on Wheels, and I'm disappointed that you found that your service to your father was bad, and I respect that, and that's not good enough. But I certainly tell you, they're supplying Meals on Wheels all over the country to people, that, and still it's keeping people alive.
Yeah,
it simply
but they've only got €3.20 to play with per meal. Like, there's 300 suppliers across the country, nearly 3,500 schools, over 500,000 students. At €3.20 per meal, they don't have much wriggle room there, do they?
They don't, but like the Meals on Wheels is roughly around a fiver. Now, it all depends on how you roll this out, like, you know, if they sit down with and there is an association of Meals on Wheels out there, and they're willing to sit down with the government, that's it. And obviously, because I'm speaking on behalf of community groups, urban and rural Ireland, that might say, hang on, we don't have the resources to do this. But certainly, if all the bodies sit around together, I can guarantee you they'd forge a solution through here where people would get a meal, guaranteed, proper hot meal into the school, delivered within maybe an hour of it being cooked or less.
Okay. Well, they arrive the night before or whatever. They don't arrive an hour or two before. They arrive much, much sooner than that. But
well, the Meals on Wheels, so we deliver ourselves to about 40 people in the Mizzen Peninsula between Skull, Ballinahob and Goli, is done that morning, probably cooked up to about 11, half 11, and must go out in especially sealed compartments and out to the people within an hour of delivery, because there's 8 or 9 people delivering at all times, so that all these meals get up quick and they get...
Just, I mean, I'm not down on Meals on Wheels, but you brought it up a number of occasions. Because I do recall in the situation I was talking about, the meals that were being provided, the ones that I saw, would have been the you know, those vacuum-packed ones that you'll see in supermarkets in the counters in the chill cabinets, right?
Yeah.
That's what they were. I don't know what the life on them would have been, but so if you think of one of those, say that you'd buy maybe a beef dinner in one of those. Vacuum packed, a bit of the beef and the potato in it and the gravy and maybe carrots or a bit of broccoli, whatever the case may be. If you think about that, the Meals on Wheels version of that was a smaller portion of that. And I found that quite disrespectful, actually, to be quite honest with you. But
every place is different. I respect that, but it's certainly the
one. So they were prepared by a supermarket chain.
They do a 2-course meal for a fiver, 2-course, so they get a dessert with that as well, and it's cooked on the morning and it's put together in the morning. Okay. So it's fantastic, great meal.
Okay, so you're preaching to the converted, actually, to some extent, because Doreen Allen said in this program a couple of months ago that she would compare it to airline or aeroplane food, and the school meals, I mean. And Dara Cleary has now said that a third of them, they must be doing some kind of research, don't even meet basic nutritional standards in the first place.
And there is numerous meals being thrown in the bin in schools, I've been told, on a regular basis. Thrown into the bin because children won't eat them. And it's hard to blame them if they come in the condition or the setup that I saw or that I published the other day. So what I'm saying is that we need to relook at this again. I think it needs to come out of one department. It needs to probably go into the Department of Education, the budget being given to that department to administer, not between two departments, because it's falling between two stools. And then focus on the type of meal. Is it a proper nutritious meal? Not an ultra-processed food that's been thrown into our young children expect to eat. I've done a small bit of research on this, Neil. I've seen where other countries, Germany and places like that, what they're doing is, in fairness, parents are subsidising it. And in other countries, it's not completely paid by the state. But the bottom line is here, the children are getting a meal that they can eat. And that's the most.
But have you looked at the menus, Michael?
Yes, yes, I listened to it. I was listening to a radio station recently who took parents, Irish parents actually, that had their children going to school in Denmark, in Germany, and different, and they asked them all what were they doing over there, and they were all doing a model of hot dinners to the children, but some were paying in the school, they were paying like 50% for the dinner, and I think people would be quite willing to pay €2 if they thought their son or daughter were getting their dinner.
Yeah, but like hang on a second, because we have to be fair to all concerned here. The parents at the start of a week or over the weekend can tick all of the boxes for all of the food provided across the week. And then say any typical day, beef, chili and rice, chicken curry and rice, cottage pie, vegetable curry, pasta, meatballs and tomato sauce. Another day, beef stew. roast chicken, mash and carrots. It's fairly extensive and varied, like, you know, I mean, surely some credit needs to be given that this is happening at all.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, we can see in a lot of schools where, and I think it could be mainly more rural schools, where it can be cooked on the school premises, so they're being given this out-of-process type of setup, as we saw the other day, and it isn't proper to be given that to children. It's not good enough for their health. And I think, you know, maybe in the bigger schools and with that, that they can make it on the school premises, that they could do something better than that. But at this stage, where the schools don't have that facility, I think the Meals on Wheels should step in, and I think the state should pay fund the Meals on Wheels instead of funding it where they are, and they can guarantee a safe, nutritious meal for children.
That's okay, because the ultra-processed would be available on many of the menus, sausages, fish fingers, you know, pre-packed ultra-processed lasagna or goujons and things like that, yeah?
Yes, it would, yeah, but I'd like to think that, you know, children will get a hot meal. And in fairness, it's like everybody, it's like all of us. If we get one decent meal a day, it's very easy to eat around that for the rest of the day. But it's important that if the family education are putting out school meals for children, there should be healthy school meals for children.
Okay.
There should be school meals that they can go home and feel that they don't have to worry or be upset to their parents that they were asked to eat something that no one could be expected, not even to throw to the common dog. Would you put some of those meals? And you can't tear all with the one brush. I respect that. But this is what I've been given, this is what I've shown, and this is what I've been told.
Okay. And are you saying this morning that it should be scrapped and that somebody should sit down and talk to Meals and Wheels to take it over at this scale, like?
Meals on Wheels came here to the Dáil some few months ago. It was brought up to them and they were willing to sit around the table. So I think the Department of Education needs to have it transferred over to them 100%, sit down around the table with the Meals on Wheels section and see how can they deliver the meals like they are delivering, the excellent meals that they are throughout the country.
Okay, Michael, thank you as always. Michael Collins, leader of Independent Ireland, West Cork TD. Let's put it to the public and to parents yet again. What are they like? What's the state of play? What's going on? What are the school meals being provided like in your primary school? Text 0868 104 106. I get an example of it. Somebody sent me a photograph already. This was an uneaten wrap my kid came home with from school. It's supposed to be chicken curry wrap with vegetables. I have no idea how they could call that a chicken curry wrap with vegetables. Firstly, I see no vegetables at all. I see some kind of a gunky, mucky-looking paste that looks like something called, resembling, as you say, chicken mushed up with rice inside in a dried... It's not even wrapped in it. It's just kind of slathered across kind of a burnt and overcooked pita. I mean, like, no one would eat that. And you wouldn't give it to a dog, to be quite honest with you, much as we love our dogs. Anyway, text 0868 104 106. By text, au croulets supply the school where I work. And to be fair, it's good. We're so lucky in Ireland to have this service, remember. The unfinished and untouched meal is sent home. And to answer your question, it's delivered to our school at 20 past midday and it's handed out at 12:30 within 10 minutes. Oh, that all suppliers around the country then were doing what our croulets do, delivered it at 12:20 and the kids were eating it at 12:30. I've seen the meals in the Gaelscoil by au croulets and honestly, they're lovely. There are so many menus and yes, they are delivered in the middle of the morning. What school is he talking about, as in Michael Collins? They can't be put in the bins as they have to bring them home. I find that they're very good, says Marie and Clan. I think he was saying that they're brought home and Mammy and Daddy's throwing them in the bin. Why don't governments stop riding people with taxes and cost of living and everyone will be able to cook their own meals? What a joke. My daughter's school meals are provided by Centra in Crosshaven. They are fully nutritious and filling. It is all down to the provider at the end of the day. Keep them coming. Ideally, text, even better with photographs. Text 0868 104 106.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I think this gives me an opportunity to segue to other things that are provided to the community or sections of the community, and rightly so, whether it's, say, for instance, in the case of school meals that are inedible, and I'm hearing more now from people who are talking about the food being absolutely delicious and the kids loving it. That's an example of au croulets who do fabulous work. But there's another email that I can actually use to give an example of how somebody also thinks that, you know, things are somewhat inequitable in different ways. I'm writing to you about an issue I feel is rarely discussed honestly, but one that deserves scrutiny. Now, I fully understand how challenging it can be for families raising children with special needs, including autism, and I have great respect for parents in that situation. However, I can't help but feel that there's a growing industry formed around this area where large amounts of public money are being spent with very little oversight or actual questioning. To give one example close to home, a neighbour of mine has a child with autism who is collected every morning by taxi with an escort and brought home again after school. While I appreciate that support is sometimes necessary, the school is not a long distance away. It is a 20-minute drive. The cost of this daily individual taxi service plus an escort amounts to an enormous expense to the state over the course of the year. I've heard figures suggesting taxi drivers can earn €1,200 or more per week from this kind of arrangement involving one child. Parent in question is at home and receives carer's allowance. I don't want to sound harsh or unsympathetic, but it raises a reasonable question. Why is it automatically assumed that this level of transport is required in every case? Many parents who work full-time still spend long periods every morning sitting in traffic to get their children to school, don't they? They don't complain because it's simply part of parenting. Surely, the question I'm asking is, where possible, parents could bring their own child to school, or transport could be organised through shared buses rather than one taxi and one escort per child, especially when distances are short. I fully accept that there are cases where individual transport is absolutely necessary, particularly when schools are far away or a child perhaps has complex needs. But it feels like the system has drifted into a one-size-fits-all approach that benefits service providers, as in taxi drivers, or indeed the families, far more than taxpayers, or arguably the wider special needs community. At a time when public services are under huge pressure, I think it's fair to ask whether this model is economical, sustainable, or properly monitored, and whether resources could be better allocated without compromising care or dignity. Appreciate hearing this topic discussed openly on your program. Mary sent that email in, asked me not to give any further details than that. But in the case of, she was referencing a neighbour with a child who's on the autism spectrum, collected every morning by a taxi with an escort and brought home again after school, indicating that the parent is in the home receiving carer's allowance, doesn't say whether there's a car in the driveway or not, but that the school is only a 20-minute drive, asking the question, at $1,200 a week per child, if it is that high, that's what she's saying that the taxi drivers can make with regards to the collection and the return of the child to the home, that surely many parents could actually drive their children themselves. So that and lots more besides. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Another one or two then with regards to topics we've been talking about this morning include the Seamus Culleton story. John just wants to mention that he says it's amazing how the media went into outrage overdrive along with our politicians for Seamus Culleton. Yet when the actual truth emerges, everybody is eerily silent. It's actually quite frightening the way this story has gone. The majority of law-abiding citizens think ICE are doing a great job in America, making the streets safer. We could definitely do with them here because whether we admit it or not, there's people walking our streets who should never have been allowed into the country in the first place. The truth needs to be out there that our politicians protect criminals while the law-abiding are neglected. What a country. I don't know that the media has been totally silent on it, particularly the Mail. There isn't a day goes by that there isn't more of the backstory regarding Seamus Culleton. And his twin daughters have come out really and said, well, it's his own fault. He threw himself under a bus. He went public and much of the things of his life that we knew nothing about have now come to fore. Anyway, stay in touch on that. Text 0868 104 106. Francis, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. You have an interesting story to tell us from around the Kilmore Road, Harbourview Road area. Is that right?
That's right, Neil, yeah.
Be my guest.
Listen, Neil, yesterday, 2 mornings ago there, I was out walking my dog with my sister and we were just walking along the north side, as you do, like, and we started discussing the ongoing regeneration programme here, like, as myself, it directly affects myself, my sister and my parents were all in the to Dunmore Gardens to stay up in Knockneeny, you know. And when we were passing, we were going on saying, like, how long it has taken, like, and we were saying, like, I was telling her that I passed there in October, I said, and I asked the foreman to come over to the fence, and I said to him, like, can you let me know when the house is hell or being ready, because directly affects Melfort. I said, I'm waiting over there for the last 11 years to be housed, and it's ongoing for, what, 20, 30 years?
What? What's ongoing for 20, 30 years?
The regeneration programme. Okay. It actually started in the early noughties is when they brought it first to the fore, you know.
But when did they start building those houses?
They started building in 2011, Niamh. That's when they actually started building. So we're talking 15 years is when the first brick went down as well, as I know, you know.
To build 50 houses?
No, they'll actually have to build in 100 plus, and that's the latter side of 100. So you're talking 110, 120 houses in 15 years, and they'll actually start developing the idea for it back as the early noughties, you know.
It took them 15 years to build 150 houses.
15 years, Neil, to build 120 houses, I think they've built in that time, so you're averaging 3 or 4 houses a year. Now, obviously, they built a lot more houses in a year, but it would stop for so long and go on again, you know.
So you asked the foreman when would they be ready? What did he respond?
I called the foreman over to the fence and I said, this is not poor by no means, Neil. And he says to me, listen, I goes, when is the house ready there? Because I said, like, I'm over there waiting on a house, and I goes, the dampness and this, that, and the other's wrong with the house, and I goes, it'd be nice to know when we're actually getting them. And he says, I tell you what, no, boy, he goes, you'll be in there for months, not a bother, I keep it warm for you. There was his exact words, no, he started laughing. And as I said, I was out with my sister the other morning, and he called another worker there. Like, I won't say who, no, whatever, but he called him off the defence, and he says to me, what's the story there with the horses? Like, I was like, yeah, we were told March, and I tell you, no, Neil, he started skitting laughing. He nearly died laughing. He says, I tell you what, no, he says, it'd be about 2030, he goes, if they're already, you'll be lucky. He goes, not exaggerating, you're talking a year or two, and I says, why? And he goes, he pointed out the end of the site, and he says, there's fierce issues going on down there, he said. He goes, they're tearing up this and tearing up that. No, he didn't go into detail as to what it was exactly, but he just was saying, not a hope, you won't be in there in March anyway. He says, not a hope. And I'm living here then, Neil. I tell you, if you just give me a minute to explain my circumstances here, I know, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people in Knockneeny.
But you are saying that he gave you the impression that they have to redo lots of the work and tear up stuff that was
there. 100%, Neil. 100%. Like, I wouldn't say it otherwise, you know. Right. Like, I can only go on what he was telling me, you know. I'm not saying it's official, like, but that's what he was telling me, like, and I believe him, like, you know, he's in there, he'll tell you more than what you're going to
do. And have you been guaranteed one of those, like, do you know?
I've been guaranteed, yeah, 100%. I went to the meetings and everything, so we had a few meetings over the years, and you'll be told, oh, this is the date and this is the date, and then you go to another meeting and it's moved further along, you know?
And what will happen then with the property that you and others will leave? What happens to those properties?
They demolish all them, Neil, from the ground up, like, they're not worth. They're cardboard boxes we're living in here. Like, Neil, the dampness is, as I said there, the dampness is up the walls and the ceiling. I had to cut my blinds in half because I can't buy new blinds because they have different sizes in the new houses. Me cooker was packing up on me. There's only one hob left. I couldn't even cook a Christmas dinner and I had to get home to my parents' house. Because in the new houses, they're the new hob cookers, you know, the modern ones.
But, like, are we talking about the houses that were built in the 70s kind of thing?
Yeah, so they were built in the mid-70s up all of Knockneeny, Neil, and they were built in one cavity block there.
That's all. They're damp and they're cold, yeah. Yeah.
And they tried to insulate some of them there back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to keep us happy for a while. But
like, if you have a landlord, which you do, there's Cork City Council are your landlords, right?
But this is what I'm saying.
Like, why didn't they replace the cooker? That's their job.
So, Neil, they're your things in your house, so they're not going to do that. Neil, listen to this now, right? 2021, they came up, there was a bus water pipe in my kitchen, right? And they come up and took off 4 foot by 3 foot of wall, plasterboard and insulation, and they said they'd be back on a Tuesday to fix it. And here we are 5 years later, and I'm in my kitchen, still with the same thing like that. And it's ridiculous, Neil. And I could have fixed it myself if I thought of coming back. But the fact is, I logged 50 calls with the City Hall and no one has ever come out to the state to fix that.
And did you rear a family in those conditions?
It's ridiculous, Neil. As I said, I cut half the blinds off because they're black, damp mould on them, and they said they couldn't buy new blinds because they don't know when they're moving. You could spend hundreds of euros doing up the house. I've no problem putting the money back into this house, but I'd call next week saying, I'm moving into the new house, you know, and all that money's gone down the swanny then.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't invest on that basis, being told you're going to be moving, you're going to get a brand new house.
I just want to say, before the trolls come for us, we know about getting free house, right? And listen, I know I'm blessed as people on the street, they have no house or a roof over their head, but like, we can only go on what we have here, like, and we're being told, you know, and I speak on behalf of a lot of people.
But you do pay rent, though.
Of course we pay rent, like, and a private landlord would have to come out and fix it for you, like, but there's no one coming out here. When I was given this house on my chest of drawers in the kitchen where you put out the cutlery, well, all busted and everything, but I just took it on the chin. I said, look, I'm getting a new house in 12, 24 months, I was famous, but as yet to happen, 11 years later, like, and we're all in the same boat here, like.
Why is it so goddamn slow? And why do they, if it's correct, have to tear stuff up and fix stuff?
I don't know, it would have happened. Like I said this, like, would have happened in anywhere else in the Cork City, like, you know? And I don't want to be picking on pieces of Cork City, no, but I know you're a Douglas man yourself, like, but would have happened in Douglas, would have happened in Cork, or would have happened anywhere else? We seem to be forgotten up here, like. That's
well, it does happen on the south side. It's called Noonan's Road. You see the appalling conditions that they've had to put up with for years and years and years in the flats.
Yeah, but as you said there on Noonan's Road, this is a whole area of Knocknaheeny, like, it's the whole place, and have you been up there all? It's places like a ghost town, like, there's everywhere is knocked, you know, and no wonder there are people crying out for houses, like. There's nothing been done, like. I mean, it's not a snail's pace up here, like.
Yeah, and who'll move with you then? Is it the whole family? This is a three-bed?
My house is a three-bedroom, yeah, and I have two kids, you know.
Jeez, so you had to rear them in those conditions over the last couple of years.
I can't even have my daughter in the small room because it's too cold and damp in there. Like, I wouldn't put her in there, Liam. You know, I wouldn't put her in there. Now I'm up in hell. But there could be three or four workers on the site one day, you might have 20 the next, and then there's no one there for 3 or 4 weeks after.
Why? You know? Like, why? Are they on the different jobs or what?
These are the questions we want answered. Like, this is what we're saying. We are getting no answers from anyone. I know Tommy Gould raising the dial of fair play to him, you know, and he does shout he is a bit vocal for us. But there seems to be nothing's been heard, you know. It's very, very frustrating for people up here, like, and I've heard my neighbours talking, like, they're all in the same boat. I was talking to one of my neighbours there out the road yesterday, and he said, like, I can't buy anything, my chairs are falling apart, my dish is falling apart, and he goes, what are we meant to do, like?
What should happen? I mean, I don't want to know who the builders are, the developers or anything like that, but they need to be told, stay on the site, have a full team of people there and get it done. You're being paid good money to get it finished.
This is it, Neil. And look, the workers are over there, only normal folk like ourselves, like, so it's coming somewhere higher up down up the ladder, you know what I mean? I know there's lack of funding involved and there's problems on sites, and like, you know the story with the other houses on the right-hand side of Kilmore Road there was 20 of them built and they were half-built and now they have to demolish them. They're there for 5 years. No one's going to take them houses because they're just left open to all the elements in the last 5 years. You know what I mean?
Oh, man, it's so shabby.
And I think there was just 2 million spent on that, like, to get them houses up to where they are, and they're just sitting there now for 5 years. And apparently, you know, they're demolishing them. You know what I mean?
That's appalling. So, oh, that's just a waste of it. It's criminal. It's cruel.
As I said, in the 90s, Knocknaheeny had a bad reputation, right? Well, after moving on past that now, it's all in the past, and people are proud of their area, Knocknaheeny, we're a proud community, and we want to see a bit of progression up here, Neil, and move on, and the face look a bit well, you know what I mean? There's a fine community of people up here, like, and it's very frustrating for us all, you know?
All right, okay, let's see if other people have any stories to add to that one. Thank you, Francis. Do stay in touch with regards to the timeline, will you?
I will, Neil. I mean, thanks for taking the call, and I appreciate it.
No, that's what we're all about. People sharing stories, people sharing experiences. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. Text 0868 104 106. And on the basis of my conversation with Francis just there, people are making some interesting observations. Maybe people should be looking after their own cookers. They're paying cheap rent. Another one then I saw earlier. There were other ones besides that actually as well, weren't there, with regards to people critical of people on housing lists or being given homes. Other people saying, is he working? I mean, if Francis was still here, what would you expect me to grill him and ask him what's in his bank account and, you know, did he ever work or is he working? Kate wants to know, is he working? Just out of curiosity, somebody says, is he strolling around because he's on a day off from work? or is there any work? Things like that. Another person says he's exactly what's wrong with our country. He wants everything for nothing. Get him off the air. That seems to be the go-to default, isn't it, to question or to interrogate people who happen to be on housing lists for different reasons. I don't know if Francis wants to respond to any of those, but there you have it. Text 0868 104 106. Text 0868 104 106. We'll come back to it after 11. But just interestingly, before I do, lovely text came in and we were talking about, you know, stories from the city and a bit of nostalgia with regards to different businesses and different places people worked. I got a lovely text in from Katrina, who says that my mam worked in the Cubiculo, which later became the Come On on Drawbridge Street. She worked in the Cubiculo in the late 60s, and I recall her telling me about her time in Cork. She had a great time. She often spoke about the bar and how she loved working there and how some of the Cork Examiner staff would come in for their morning coffee and scones. And she also mentioned that at her boss's request, she had to ask couples canoodling the corner to please refrain. She was mortified. Different times, I guess. It was a respectable premises. She often received passes to the Opera House and had a great nightlife. She shared a house with a lady from West Cork, and she had happy memories before she settled down and had children like me, says Katrina, in the 1970s. I remember the Cubiculo in the back end of the 70s and the early 80s. They had a Space Invader table there, which I became seriously addicted to. It was very handy because you sat down at it and you could put your pint up on the table as well, and the screen was built into it. But I loved your bit about your mam having to ask couples to stop canoodling in the corner. There was a regular phrase used over in Moore's Hotel years and years and years ago. I'm not saying it was to me. It was to somebody sitting near me, where a barman came down and said, "No public display of affection in the bar."
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And be part of those conversations. Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Text 0868 104 106. Now, back to my conversation with Francis and the state of play on the north side with taking forever to finish much needed housing. And some people were quite critical. That's what's wrong with the country. Everything for nothing. Is he working at all or strolling around all day? Francis was back and he said, "I expected that kind of a response," he said. And to answer those questions from those people who texted, "Yes, I am working and I have been working since the day I left school." Works with the Owen Mill Confectionery and has always worked. That is why we have public authority housing. That's why we have social housing. That's why we have affordable housing, to give it to those that need it. I don't think anybody at all would be 100% happy with any house given to any freeloader who just sits back and says, "I want everything for nothing." I think there should be criteria in place where others are prioritized against wasters or freeloaders or people who have never, ever worked for no reason. I'm talking about people who have disabilities or run well or whatever the case may be in their life. I get all of that. But for those that could or wouldn't, why would you reward them? But in the case of Francis, that's a different story entirely. In cases like domestic violence that you've been dealing with this morning, or assault, you hear the perpetrator and their poor me sad story. "I was off my head on cocaine or drink, Your Honour," when they've never even taken cocaine, or they blame it on a bad childhood. They blame it on their upbringing. As much as some of these stories may be true, offenders often make things up to get a lighter sentence. And sometimes they get away with it. You had a victim text this morning saying she can't sleep and is suffering from anxiety. You hear the victim and the trauma they're going through, don't you? Then you have the criminals moaning and crying because they have to sleep on the floor of a cell. Nobody put you in the cell, pal, but yourself. So stop crying, stop committing crimes, stop hurting people, stop damaging their property, and you won't have to sleep on the floor of a cell in the first place, says Desi. Text 0868 104 106. Don't give out my details. I've suffered myself years ago from coercive domestic violence. I am now 13 years free of this man now, thank God. This lady you're speaking with and people like her play two parts, the abuser and the victim. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. They are two different significant parts. One is the abuser and one is the victim. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. I'll come back to more calls and texts and emails between now and midday. But I mentioned in the intro this morning that they are trialling on a pilot basis drone delivery across parts of Cork City from today. A company called Manna has announced a new pilot program taking place in Cork City at the moment, a gradual rollout of drone deliveries. And say, as an example of that, they're working at the moment with the Marina Market starting from today, with some of the independent retailers down there delivering food by drone. Joined by Bobby Healy, the founder of Manna. Good morning to you, Bobby.
Good morning, Neil. It's an honour.
Today is the day. I mean, it's inevitable that the world moves this way. We embrace technology and new developments and what have you. And amongst them, of course, are drone deliveries. I thought there was an issue with the skies above Cork last week that had restrictions. Can you unpick that for us?
Yeah, sure. Look, when you mix our type of traffic in the air beside Cork Airport, which is obviously a very important operation, you have to have rules of engagement for sharing the airspace. So AirNav Ireland and the Irish Aviation Authority put in place what's called a geozone, which is an area of space around Cork where if you want to fly in there, you have to get coordinated for safety. It's like a traffic management system. And it was a bit of a surprise to a lot of local drone operators and the rescue services, for example, I spoke to the police. Everyone was wondering, does this mean they're all grounded and they can't fly anymore? And there was concern, but that's been put to bed now. There should be no concern. We don't stop anyone from flying or even slow them down. So, but it was definitely a hot topic last week and then the last few nights. And I don't see that in any way. We've been doing it this way up in Dublin for a couple of years and in Texas as well and Finland. And it's never been an issue and it won't be in Cork.
OK, can I just make you, because you brought up the Dublin aspect. I don't mean to be negative about this, but I had some Dublin residents on the air about 3 or 4 months ago talking about how invasive they could be and how noisy and loud.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not at all. I mean, we make less noise than a small electric car going past. And when we go past, we're going at about 50-60 kilometers per hour. When we go over somebody's head in Dublin, nobody looks up. The only part where you might say it's invasive is when we deliver to somebody's house. We come down into your back garden and we float there at about 15 metres for about 25 seconds and then we're gone. But we certainly make a lot less noise than a delivery bike or a delivery motorbike or a car or any road traffic for that matter. Okay. And we're around for far less time as well.
Yeah. So you're flying at about 80 metres. This is from the Examiner this morning. You've brought in new propulsion systems and motors and propellers, and the noise is no longer an issue. That's great to hear. And so you're flying at 80 meters, but you clearly have to come down. Just explain how it actually works in principle.
Yeah, it's like magic. So we take off at our base, we go straight up to 80 meters, and then we fly. We kind of hug the ground at 80 meters. So Cork is very hilly, as everybody knows. So we'll climb as we go up hills, but we'll always stay 80 meters above as we cruise. And then when we arrive at your house, if you've ordered, let's say, if you're a Meals on Wheels customer or if you're getting something from one of the vendors in Marina Market, we get to your house at 80 meters and then we hover there. We descend slowly to 15 meters. And when we get to 15 meters, the doors of the aircraft open up and we drop the bag down on a thread, on a biodegradable thread. And that takes about 4 or 5 seconds to get from the aircraft down onto your garden. And we often deliver it on the trampolines, for example. So, I mean, for families...
You have a dog in the garden, they'll wolf it though, right?
Oh, dogs love it. Dogs, I mean, some dogs get very happy about it because they smell the food. And some don't care about it and they're wondering what's going on. And some will bark, but that's dogs. I have 3 dogs myself. So,
is there any privacy aspect to this? I mean, because there are there cameras on board? Are you recording anything?
Yeah. No, so we don't. So we have a camera on board, but so when we deliver for safety, we're not allowed to deliver where there's people underneath, right? So if a small kid runs out and gets all excited and they want to catch the bag, we won't deliver. And the way we check that is briefly when we just get over your house, we flick on the camera, make sure there's nobody underneath and flick it off. Nothing's recorded, no pictures, no video, nothing. And that information doesn't go outside of our remote pilot operating the aircraft. So completely GDPR compliant. very low-res camera, less information than you would see looking at Google Maps, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So how do you get the food, though? Like you say, at the moment you're trialling with the Marina Market, the likes of La Cantina or Frankie's and
That's
Burritos.
Right. Yeah.
Does this drone go to the Marina Market or what?
We're also going to be delivering meals on wheels, I'm glad to say. So, like, we found that a lot of people that are not mobile or just don't want to leave their house use the service a lot as well. So it's not just your young people using this.
That's an essential service, that aspect of it.
100% it is, 100%. And I remember back as far as, 6 years ago, we were delivering during COVID. We were delivering COVID packs to elderly people, and it was an essential service during the time.
Yeah.
So the way it works is, when we fly and we drop the bag, it'll be a bag that's from that vendor. So be it your Meals on Wheels meal pack, or it'll be a burrito from Burritos and Blues, and it'll be just in a biodegradable paper bag, and that's it. And because we're actually flying about 60 kilometers per hour in a straight line, it's 3 minutes from Marina Market to anywhere in Cork. So your burrito or your ice cream are going to be in perfect condition when you get them.
3 minutes. So this is your Just Eat or your Deliveroo that heretofore would have been on electric bikes or cars or motorbikes and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, we work with those companies. So we help them to just get there faster and just deliver in a better quality, a safer way, a quieter way, a more private way. It's just better on all fronts.
Okay. There was some pushback, I have to tell you, because there were some local councillors and TDs on Leaside. Thomas Gould, a sitting TD, says that these drones are not delivering essential goods. They're being used for lattes and takeaways, and the local residents are paying a high price. How would you respond to the accusation that all you're doing is delivering flat whites and lattes?
Yeah, well, we definitely do deliver flat whites and lattes for anyone that's interested. But we're also delivering Meals on Wheels, and for any charity in the area, we're happy to deliver their products. We also deliver books up in Dublin. We deliver hardware store. We deliver the local butchers. We deliver for about 50 small businesses in Dublin, and it's not all.
Would you deliver prescriptions and medicine and things like that?
We deliver over-the-shelf medicine from pharmacies as well. Yes, we don't deliver prescriptions because it's not that straightforward from a regulatory point of view.
Yeah. So at the moment now, it's a pilot scheme. Is that means? Because I was keen to have a bit of lunch delivered here to the radio station to trial it out this morning, but I'm too far from you right now at the moment, am I?
Yeah, you are, unfortunately. I would have loved that, actually. We delivered to the Late Late Show a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, you'll do it in Dublin. You'll do it for RTE. We won't do it. Go on.
we'll get there. So, it is a trial. We want to teach people about this service. We want everyone to be part of it. So any small business or charity or local stakeholder that wants to work with us and use the service can. And everyone's going to learn, right? We've reached out to all the councillors, all the TDs, back last year, all the local business landowners, everything, every local stakeholder we've tried to speak to. Haven't gotten to everyone, but we've an open door, and I'd love to speak to absolutely anyone that's interested, either in a positive or a negative way, or just want some questions answered. Happy to talk to them. But we're going to be months there just trying it out and seeing what Cork City thinks of it. And by the way, we'll have a drone dressed in red for everyone in Cork to keep everyone happy. But we're not there saying you're all getting this whether you like it or not. We're pretty confident you're going to love it. 62% of the households in Dublin 15 use the service, so it's very, very popular. And they're using it for everything. I know a lot of people talk about coffees and stuff. It's absolutely everything that somebody might want to need.
I get it.
Young, old, everything in between. It's just delivery.
To be quite honest with you, I think it will fly.
I see what you did there. We've been staying under the radar for a while, Neil. Yeah.
But people don't have to have any apprehension about doing a bit of sunbathing when the beautiful summer arrives and a drone is filming them overhead. That is not the case.
There's no fear of sun. There's no fear of sun anyway. I've holidayed in Cork, so you're safe there. No, there's not. Like I said, we see a lot less than you'll see on Google Maps, for example, and nothing is recorded. And we only switch on the camera for about 10 seconds over the house we are delivering to, can see nothing else. And if there's people in the view of the camera, we don't deliver, but we also scrub those people out. So in the image that comes through to our operator, even if there's people there, they don't see them. They're just told there's people there, and we don't deliver.
I got you. And just finally, is it a bit too early to ask you about the takeoff, the uptake as to are people booking already?
We're only just switching it on, and we're only going to do a handful of flights today so that everyone can check it out. And we're in the marina market the whole time with the drone, so people can see. We've been there for the last month or so. And people can come, bring the kids. I highly recommend that come and see the drone. Like we get people coming up to our bases all the time with the kids to see it and talk about how it all works, all that stuff. Honestly, Neil, it's pure magic, and kids and especially love it. And there's so much to learn about the technology. It's a brave new world. I'm so proud an Irish company is winning in this worldwide. We're beating Amazon, we're beating Google, and it's all happening here in Ireland.
Let's do a few drone lunch giveaways at some stage, Bobby.
Let's do it, Neil. I'd love to.
Yeah,
and we can do it. You know, any charities that are listening to this, you work with us for free. So anything you want delivered, any leaflets, any books, anything like that, or if you want to sell scones by drone, come talk to us and we'd be happy to parry it.
I like that. Scones by drone. Yeah, we could have a drone on the phone competition on
that,
it.
Actually.
Yeah, you're on fire this morning, pal. You really and truly are. Good luck with it. We'll keep a close eye on it. Appreciate you taking the call. Is there a delivery? Oh, yeah, because text coming. So there's an additional delivery charge then, ultimately, is there?
$1.99 delivery charge, yeah.
I gotcha. Okay, have a good one. Fly safe.
All right, thank you a million, Neil.
Take care, Bobby. Bye-bye. Bobby Healy, the founder of Mana. This is the world we live in now. I mean, you're talking about a fairly rapid delivery, aren't you? You're talking about really, really quick in a matter of minutes. It's difficult to see the downside to it, to be honest with you, to be quite honest. There was an aspect and a worry about noise. Somebody sent me audio from Dublin of the noise outside their apartment window at some stage, but they seem to have made a difference in that one. They've changed the propulsion systems, the motors, the propellers. I suppose time will tell, and this is the pilot. But certainly, I'll tell you what, hopefully might even sort it out next week. We'll do some drone on the phone giveaways, a competition on the Neil Prendeville Show with the drone delivery lunch. Be a bit of fun, wouldn't it? Let's get that one sorted.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
All right. Okay. So we cover the cost on it. Another text here saying, how do they fly the drones at night? It's completely automated. There's not somebody at a base that's actually navigating it in the sky or anything. They're totally based on your air code. This is my understanding, a moment to correction, but I think I'm right. So your air code, you would need an air code, and then the coordinates are banged into the software system, and the drone literally goes from A to B to your air code. So it can fly day, night, fog, whatever the case may be. It doesn't actually need vision, I would imagine, to be honest with you. It just needs the air code to be punched into the software system, and away it goes. So keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106, and we'll give away some drone lunches next week. We'll sort this out when we get off the air, and we'll have drone on a phone giveaway for you next week. All right. On the school meals, remind your TD Michael Collins that you go to school to be educated, not fed. Eat at home and bring a lunch. I know it's kind of interesting that we need to do this in the first place, but because of societal changes, and two parents working, etc., and also food poverty, never mind fuel poverty, this is the necessity. So on one hand, it's a wonderful service, but I don't think that politicians should be lauding it up, because it's happening because of inequity in the country that we live in. Morning, I remember in the late 50s and early 60s in primary school, the brothers gave out a hot cup of cocoa and a big iced bun at 10 o'clock every morning. They were happy days. Cocoa and big ice bun to look forward to. As a child, I loved simple meals like sausage and mash or cottage pie. These would cost very little. Producing curries and wraps and things like that are not traditional to the Irish palate. That's a very interesting point, because you wonder whether there's an amount of gut issues in this country by virtue of the foods that we're eating. Where our microbiome or our DNA from thousands and thousands of years are maybe not suited to a lot of the different diets that we're eating now. Just asking. You've been told by countless people that the majority of kids are not eating the hot meals. You have been told that. All right, fair play. The whole scheme should be scrapped. It's costing 300 million annually, and it's mind-boggling waste, with the vast majority of it going into the bin. Unless each school has its own kitchen, the meals that are being supplied are always going to look disgusting. I sent you pictures a while ago of meals that were being served in a nursing home in Riverstick to my mother. And yes, they have their kitchen there, but at the end of it all, cash is king to all of these places. They're all out for profit, and will buy the cheapest ingredients possible. Hope you get to read this out. One of the things that Michael Collins alluded to is we're not even quite sure if it's Irish beef or whether it's Brazilian beef or where the chicken actually comes from. That's a worry. And one of the menus that I actually saw, all of the beef on it, is halal, which would be prepared and the animal slaughtered in a different fashion. I've helped with Meals and Wheels on the north side and they're fantastic, freshly prepared. However, my grandson's school meals are awful and he never, ever eats them. There is something wrong, really, in the state of Denmark if we're continuing to get these kind of texts from people. The food is awful, it's not eaten, it's thrown out. There's massive waste of food and the cost attached to it. I have to interject regarding the school meals being slated. My daughter only gets the vegan meals and it's absolutely delicious. It meets certain nutritional needs. Mexican mixed beans, slightly spiced. Another meal is borlotti beans with sweet potato and quinoa, or as I used to call it, quinoa. And they both look appealing and they're so tasty. So there you go. Not diminishing what's being said about the school meals, but I'm a bit miffed that we missed out on all the goodies, even when the last of my three finished secondary school books were made free. We missed out on everything. We seem to miss the boat. I have one in first year college now. I imagine college fees will be scrapped just when she finishes fourth year. I know people with more money who pay no fees, and it's a total joke. Yeah, well, unfortunately, it looks as if the bus pulled out of the stop before you got to it. I cancelled both my kids' school lunches. Absolutely disgusting what was being given to them. Our school have Ashdale in Grange. It's very nice. The kids are enjoying them. Delivery is hot and the kids eat it straight away. And one final one. Hot lunches to my school, son's school, are absolute tripe. Highly processed meats, high in fats and salt and processed pastes and additives. Don't fool yourself into thinking this is highly nutritious homemade meals, Neil. I suppose it depends on a person's perspective of what healthy food truly is. I can tell you it is not. I do feel for the suppliers, however, they have very little margin in which to make a profit. When you take into account staff costs, ingredients, electricity, rent and packaging, they have €3.20 from the government for a hot meal. You would hardly make profit on that, let alone provide a meal that is truly nutritious. All this talk of my kids love it, is also just nothing short of ridiculous. Kids generally love McDonald's, hot chicken rolls, chocolates, sweets. This does not mean the food is good for their growing bodies. Keep those coming. Text 0868104106. Desi himself is a chef and has been all his life. And he says words to the effect that if you can put a chef's uniform on a monkey, but it's still a monkey. Harsh words about chef there, Desi.
That's very true, but it is an old saying from chefs, you know. You just because you're wearing a chef's uniform, it doesn't necessarily make you a chef. You have to have pride in your uniform, pride in the work you're doing. See, if a chef doesn't have pride, then he's going to throw junk out. And you heard it there this morning. One school has lovely food, the next school has crappy food. It's the same suppliers. So where is it going wrong?
No, they're all different suppliers. No, I mean, I can go back over the stats again. There's 300 different suppliers all over the country. And there could be a dozen or 15 or 20 in the greater Cork region.
Yeah, but and your dry goods are usually coming from Musgraves or Cisco or MP O'Sullivan, or, you know, they're the three main ones. And your veg will be coming from Keelings or O'Sullivan's. You know, they're usually that you might have 10, 15 suppliers in one kitchen.
Okay, so the raw materials are absolutely fine. It's how they're cooked and
coming from the same source.
So are you saying that it's very easy for me to read out a list of things like penne pasta and tomato sauce or beef stew or chicken broccoli pasta bake?
Yeah, I've often heard you reading menus out and you say, God, that sounds great. But sounds great, and what you get on the plate are two completely different things. Like if I told you, Neil, and make you beautiful, succulent, hand-reared pork wrapped in flaky, golden puff pastry, served with hand-crafted potatoes, and accompanied with organic beans grown on the farm and all.
What would I ask you? I'd say, have you any gravy with that?
You get sausage rolls, beans and chips. You know what I mean?
You're right. Oh, my God. What a great example.
That's what you would get.
So it's completely different on the plate to your menu description.
It's like you see Atlantic fresh salmon on the menu. The bloody salmon never seen the Atlantic Ocean in its life. It came from a farm up in Ashley.
But they can't say that if it's Atlantic salmon. It's got to be from the Atlantic or at least gone on holidays.
The supplier can't say it. But when the chef is writing the words, Atlantic fresh salmon, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, chefs are notorious for using words.
Do you think that there are chefs in 2026 who would have farmed salmon but put it on the menu as organic or freshly caught Atlantic wild salmon?
All depends on really what way it's cut. You know, many years ago, it was always salmon steaks. And you cut it, and they were actually grilled.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, are they lying about what they're actually serving and claiming that it's wild when it's farmed?
They might stretch the truth a bit. But it's all in the wording of a menu. You know, you have to make a menu sound appealing.
You're right. No, listen, you're absolutely right, and you've given a great example of it. For me to be describing a menu, and a lot of them look absolutely delicious. I've got a Monday menu, a Tuesday, a Wednesday and everything. But the reality is, parents are saying that the meals are disgusting, there's not enough, okay, that they're soggy inside in the box, that they're cold, that they're gunk.
Anything delivered in a box. The same way you buy a fish supper, fish and chips in a fish and chip shop, and it looks absolutely gorgeous. And it's wrapped up in the paper, traditionally. But that steam inside in that paper, it's by the time you get it open, it's usually broken in half, and the batter has gone solid.
So should it be? I know that, but it's a wonderful initiative, particularly for those who are time poor or money poor, to have food provided at school. So what are we going to do? Is it a case of, you know, Michael Collins wants it scrapped, for instance, given over to Meals on Wheels? Like, should I mean, some would say, if the kids are hungry enough, they'll eat it.
Well, you see, I would say, and don't get me wrong, there's some really, really good chefs out there. I mean, top chefs that haven't a qualification in their name, and they started in the wash-up in the kitchen when they were a young lad of 16, and they progress through it. But then you've other guys coming in, I can boil an egg, I must be a chef.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think, because
I think this food would be more kind of, without wanting to insult all of those providers, it's probably more conveyor belt food, you know? Kind of, there's a process.
Everything's coming in bags, you know, and carrots, potatoes. The potatoes are covered in dry white chemical to keep them white. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my God!
Back in the day, every place had a veg house out the back with some young lad out the back peeling potatoes, peeling carrots, slicing cabbage. You get cabbage now in a bag, and you can see the white roots in the bag. The whole bloody thing was just shoved down a robo-cooked slicer. You take the roots out of cabbage you know, it's taking your time and having pride in your work, and some chefs just don't do that. A chef asked me to make lasagna Monday, and he handed me 2 kgs of mince and 5 kgs of sliced carrots. He put on this.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's a good start.
But like 2 kg and a big bag of carrots, it was 5 or 10. It was just filling it up with carrots.
Oh, I get you. Yeah, he's just bulking it up. Yeah, okay.
Another chef one day, potato and leek soup, which is a traditional Irish dish. I must admit, he wasn't Irish, but I was doing the pasta. I was doing relief chef, and then he gave this place a hand because he had to go away, whatever. And I looked into the pot, and he was making potato and leek soup. And there's the onions. They weren't skinned. They were just cut in half. There's the leeks. They weren't washed. The big root was still on the bottom of the leek. And for his potato, he had used the blanched chips from the day before.
Oh, for God's sake, that's disgusting. Seriously. Was he gonna liquidise that then, or what?
Oh, I filled him, and it's an old soup gun. Sort that. The soup gun.
Thrown out.
Threw it all in, gunned up, and nobody man in the wiser.
All right, man. Please said that. Okay, learned a lot, really, when you talk to a chef. Text 0868104106. Quite an amount of voice notes in there over the last 24 hours or so. One of them actually had to do with the transport that's provided to families with children who need transport to school. They may well be on the autism spectrum. They could have disability issues. So that would be the taxi driver plus the escort that also has to go in the taxi with them. In Ireland, children with autism special needs get free transport, including taxis. Not exclusively, sometimes it can be buses, but including taxis if they can't use standard school transport services and they meet specific criteria. Now, it's Bus Éireann have the contract for that, and they give out the contracts then to taxi drivers. And but you'd have to have recognised special schools, special classes, and children with specific needs. So it's about 2,300 taxi contractor vehicles around, and they pick up the child with special needs. There's an escort in the car as well. And then after school, they bring the child home as well. And that's paid for by the state. Somebody said bizarrely in a text here, and they claim it to be a fact. I can tell you for a fact that there are parents of children on the spectrum getting paid in this system to bring their own children to school. They pay them because they can't provide the taxi, says Mary. So instead, the parents are... I mean, you're telling me it's a fact. I'd have to have a closer look at that because it doesn't make sense. I mean, why would you pay parents to bring their own child to school because there's no taxi there? The question should be asked, well, if you can bring your own child to school, just bring your own child to school. Not be paid for it. Just do it. It's things that parents do. So on that basis then, I got quite an amount of different texts. So that's one of them, one of the voice notes on that one. Let's have a listen to this.
Well, if the government had in place the proper services to transport children with autism, proper buses and stuff like that, they wouldn't have to use taxis. And they are each and every single one of them entitled to the transport.
Okay, apparently, thank you for that. There's a special transport grant, I'm told. So parents of Ireland, children in Ireland with special education needs can receive a special transport grant to drive their children to school when the department can't provide a bus service or a taxi. So it would appear to be true, and it's worked out at a rate of 41.8 cent per kilometre. There are different rates, of course, but it seems that in principle Mary is right. There's a special transport grant where parents get this payment to drive their children to school when the Department of Education can't come up with a bus service or a specific taxi. So keep those coming. Text 0868104106. Actually, we were talking about the start of Lent. For those of you that are asking, because we're only 2 days into it, Vivian is still off the drink. But Ralph was telling us about what he gave up for Lent. So have a listen to this one.
Hey, Neil. Ralph here. Listen, yeah, what I did 1 year, 4 years ago was I gave up social media for Lent. Around the corner, and it's never looked back. Definitely worth a try if there are any listeners wanting to put down the phone and live life a little. Try give up social media for Lent. Delete all the apps and see what happens. Life will be changed. Have a good day. Love the show.
Yeah, thank you, Ralph. Appreciate it. I mean, you know, if you don't enjoy it, then of course that is one good reason to walk away from it. But if you do enjoy it, though, and it brightens your life or it opens you to a bigger world, then, you know, I think it's about trying to control the amount of time that we spend on it, right? And sometimes the interactions can be terrific. You know, you do different things in this program when we share stuff on my own Instagram page and the lads share on Facebook and X and things like that. So we would find it as being a very beneficial tool. But I know what you're saying with regards to it can become a habit that's hard to break and you end up a lot of the time just aimlessly scrolling. You know, people want to maybe give it up, well and good, but I think we all should be attempting to spend less time on it. Some more voice notes while we're just clearing the decks here. This one came in actually from a parent recently telling us about her son and an assault and her son being beaten up. But have a listen to this one.
Last year, my son was out with two of his friends at about 9:15 on a Saturday evening in our village, and he rang us to say that he was after getting beaten up. So we went straight out to the village. We found him hiding behind a garage. These three young fellas had come towards them, and he put his hand out as if he was going to shake his hand. So my son, being the nice guy that he is, put his hand out to shake it, and he boxed him straight in the nose and knocked him clean out. His two other friends obviously ran, which they would. They're only, at the time, they were 14 years of age. The three guys in question ran after them. So we went around in the car looking for them. We also called the guards. The guards brought my son and my husband in the car around the village. They actually tracked the boys down. They brought the boy in question that knocked my son to the ground and burst his nose open. They actually brought him home. But guess what? Because he's underage, nothing can be done. This particular boy in question has done this many a times. He's well known to the guards. So they asked us to call the following day to make a statement. The guards were absolutely fantastic. They were well known to them. We went down to the station to make a statement, and they asked us to come back down 2 days later, which we did, and asked my son if he'd like to go further. And it turned out that we didn't expect him to go any further, because he would have to stand up in court and give evidence against this young fella, who in their right mind at 14 and 15 years of age is going to stand up in court and give evidence against these guys. These guys are, they're ruthless. They don't care what they do to people. They really don't care. Another friend of my son's had got robbed out in Douglas. They took his money off him. They just don't care anymore. And the guards know all these people. They are well known.
Get on to Prendeville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Get in touch. Text 0868 104 106. We'll pick it all up again in the morning. But the big topic of conversation with everybody for weeks now has been the rain. It's a pain, and it doesn't seem as if it's going to be stopping anytime soon. Of course, Alan O'Reilly's got his finger on the pulse of weather up at Carlow Weather. Morning, Alan.
Morning, Neil.
Somebody said to me this morning that we have had, I don't know whether it's correct or not, it feels like as if it's right, 49 consecutive days when rain fell here in Cork County. What about that?
Possibly in some part of Cork. Now, a lot of people are basing it on the story from yesterday, which was Valentia in Kerry. And as anybody that, like me, knows, Cork and Kerry are two very different places. But what I can tell you, Neil, is that it has rained for the last 44 days at Cork Airport. So it's 44 days in a row.
And is it true, this statistic, that that's four times the average rainfall that you'd normally expect, say, in the first couple of weeks of February?
Not four times the quantity, four times the amount of days, possibly, yes. Now, that's kind of a stat that's very hard to kind of really narrow down, because it really does depend on where you go in terms of trying to record it. Like, and I would say that of those 44 days, Neil, only two of them had only 0.1 millimetres of rain.
We nearly got away with it.
Nearly got away with it. But no, there has been a lot of rain, especially in February. But the last dry day at Cork Airport was on the 5th of January.
Well, that really does back up the stats then, you know, like it's going to be one hell of a summer if all of the rain is going to be gone, isn't it?
Well, it is. And with climate change, we know we will see more of this, you know, heavy rainfall, but we will also see longer droughts. So I can bet money that you will be talking about hose pipe bans and advising people how to conserve water in a few months' time, because we don't store very much of what falls when it does fall.
All right. Well, you should be storing it now. There's plenty of it to
we
go
should.
Around. So,
indeed, we should.
How long is this destined to continue then? Or is this just typical of January, February, it's wet?
It's typical enough that January and February can be wet. Now, normally we would get a little bit of a break here and there. I do have some good news, though, Neil.
All right, share.
The rain is going to get warmer.
It's that's something to look forward to.
12 or 13 degrees from tomorrow for a few days. So the rain will get warmer. That's about the only good news I have. There will be some sunny spells, especially on Sunday. You will find some breaks on Sunday. So I think there's a lot of people itching to get out. The gardeners are itching to get out into the gardens. But I think you need to go out there with a web feet rather than a pair of boots even, because the gardens are so wet at the moment.
Yeah. So what, and can you look further than the warm rain at the weekend? Say, for instance, next week.
It still looks like more bands of rain coming. The only good news is it's going to come from the west rather than from the south, because obviously anybody in Cork would know what's been unusual about the rainfall we've seen over the last few months is how much of it has come up from the south. Normally the low pressure systems would come from the west, and that is going to be more the case next week. So that means the west will see the highest rainfall amounts. But I'm afraid at the moment, beyond 7 to 10 days, we can't really tell. And for the next 7 to 10 days, all I can see is the odd dry spell and more rain and more rain.
OK, so it's impossible then to ask you what kind of a summer we'll have then, is it?
By the laws of average, the amount of rainfall we see over a year generally doesn't change a lot. It has increased a little bit, but maybe we're setting ourselves up for a great summer or even a spring, because we, from a meteorological point of view, we haven't started spring yet until the 1st of March.
Okay, well, on that optimistic note, I shall leave you. We have to put up for it for a little bit yet, but the spring and the summer will be absolutely glorious. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
My words, not his. Although he's as optimistic as I am, Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather. But that's just the way it is. So whatever we have, like it's gas really, because the last couple of hours and even right now, looking out the window, it's a lovely, lovely day. It seems to be very calm. We're going to get mild temperatures, 11 to 12 degrees. I can see blue skies and a bit of sunshine. But that isn't to say that it won't be very different tomorrow. And I can guarantee you one thing, it will be very different tomorrow, that's for sure. Maybe we need to build more reservoirs, other parts of the world. Somebody says by text, what about building a few reservoirs and putting us ahead of the rest of Europe in the summer and avoiding hose pipe bans and restrictions of water and stuff like that. Anyway, would you want to get a quick call? Yeah, we'll just quick one in there before we love you and leave you for the day that's in it. Noel, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good. Talk to me about fog.
So basically last night in Cork, I'm only going to vote half as night now, obviously, because I went out to the car to get something, and the whole place was just like, the fog was thick everywhere. So I went out to the car and came back in, and like that, now my throat was kind of burning, but I was kind of laughing. I was saying, Jesus, what's going on? So I was on to my friend in Bishopstown, and she was out the back having a fag, and she said to me she couldn't kind of see everywhere anyway. And then this morning I was talking to a guy there, just to do work, whatever. He lives in Dripsy, and he was the same in Dripsy, so he couldn't see anywhere outside the back of his house. A big, thick fog was all over Cork last night. But my issue was, like, why would a fog come in the cold weather, Neil? It's very unusual. And also, what I'd like to know is what is inside in the fog.
Why do you think there's anything in it but kind
why,
of...
Why was her throat burning? That guy was the same.
Well, your one's throat's burning because she's out the back smoking
a
fag.
That's fair enough. I knew you were going to say that. That's right, that's fair enough. But that guy in Dripsy wasn't. He's a fitness fanatic. Why was his throat burning last night after being out in the fog?
Are you talking about pollution or chemtrails?
Chemtrails, I reckon. Yeah, okay. There has to be something. They're spraying something, 100%, Neil.
You think?
100%. Listen, I mean, like, you know, just look up. You know, you see an armoured plane that's going along and all of a sudden there's a small bit of smoke, and in 30 seconds the smoke has gone behind it. And then looking at the chemtrails, and they're literally all across the sky. You know, we're not stupid. It's there. It's the evidence is there. It's coming out more and more. But I'd like to know is, like, what's in these fogs?
What do you think people are spraying and why?
I don't know, Neil. That's why I'm ringing you. Maybe you can do a bit of investigation for us.
Every time this topic comes up, of course, people are accused of having tin hats on them, you know?
Oh, 100%, but sure, like, it's the same with the whole COVID thing. Sure, everybody, you know, they were saying, you know, they all had tinfoil hats on them, but conspiracy theorists, but sure, look, most of them that, you know, people have been talking, what they're saying is now coming through. So I'd like to know, like, why are they doing it? You know what I mean? Why are they spraying? Like, obviously, you know, they're spraying the skies, which is affecting, you know, the bees, butterflies, you know.
Do you think that they're spraying the skies with chemicals just to make us compliant, like, or is it, or to keep us stupid or dopey?
Yeah, 100%.
All right,
yeah.
Okay. And you saying you've spoken to people at Glasheen, Bishopstown, Granagh, all complaining of burning throats.
Well, it's a bit unusual. Like, I mean, why is this thick fog there? Okay. And I tell you, Neil, going back in the summer, I say August, when we really had really hot weather, do you remember?
Yeah.
And it was just glorious. And we were down on the beach in Garrettstown, and one particular afternoon, and like that, a fog came. I'll never forget it, because everybody cleared off the beach. Like, we couldn't see, like, the water, put it that way. It just came so thick. No, it didn't
it's
come.
It's fog, though.
We get fog.
Like, we're a foggy country on the Atlantic.
Yeah, I was saying, okay, sea fog. But it didn't. It came from inland, nearly out to the sea, which was very unusual. That's what put me off. And honest to God, you've no idea, because we'd stay in the caravan park down there in Dennis's, and the amount of people that were complaining that were sick with flu-like symptoms for days after that.
All right.
Me included.
Let's see if others people have an opinion on that. Oh, just before I leave, I'll tell you one thing that I did notice last night, around about 11:30, 11:45, how bright it still was last night. Had anybody ever noticed that? It was like as it was four in the
five. Did you see the sky yesterday? Did you see the clouds when the rain, eventually that heavy rain stopped? Did you see the colour of the clouds? Very unusual.
Okay.
It's just weird. Okay. It's just
food
weird.
For thought, food for thought. Thanks, Noel. Pick up on that. Text 0868 104 106. Our lines will stay open. Ciara Evans is up next from the pod at midday. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.